Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. With your morning drive. We're here till 5. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday.
Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday.
We'll do that later on. Get your requests in now. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Yesterday was National Sibling Day. And so we're going to jump into some sibling rivalries in TV and in movies and in music. And I'm an only child, so yesterday I was just like, all right. So we are going to talk about some of the things that are really true about growing up as an only child. So all of that will be coming up in honor of National Siblings Day, which I hope you guys had a good one yesterday. But coming up before that, right after we take a break here in a few minutes, our good friend Dan Feinberg is going to join us. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk TV. He writes for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. There's always a lot of TV to talk about with Dan, and we'll get him in here in just a few minutes. So that's the show this morning. Get your Triple Play Thursday requests in. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. And that's what's coming up on the show, so stay tuned. And if you are an only child, I would love to hear from you guys a little bit later on, because we're going to be talking about things that only children would understand. So, and sibling rivalries and all that cool stuff coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let me say hello to my producer, Dan Hush. Hi, Dan. Dan. Tom.
I'm hurt.
I'm sorry, man. No, it's, you know, when I called my producer for like 11 years, Dan. It's Tom. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how's it going, Nick?
All right, man. How are you?
Good.
Okay. Now, you have siblings.
I do.
Did you celebrate National Sibling Day?
Not really. I did say hello to my brother, who I live with.
that was
pretty much it.
Yeah. So just no big celebration or anything like that.
No, we'll save that for next year. We'll do it twice next year.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, we got some movie siblings to talk about, some TV siblings to talk about, and of course, in the music world, there are some classic sort of contentious sibling rivalry.
Love a good sibling rivalry.
Yeah, mostly between brothers.
Yeah.
And so we'll get to that a little bit later on. So that's all coming up. So that's Tom. He's producing this morning. And in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hey, Vic.
Good morning, sir.
How are you, buddy?
Doing very well. Happy to be here.
What's going on?
Oh, I'm just sitting here chatting with Ro.
Oh.
Ro Coleman's in the newsroom. Oh, say hi, Ro.
Hi, Ro.
We're talking about some upcoming things and exciting things here at GN.
Okay, very cool. Did you see any of the Cubs game?
I did. I actually did. I woke up just enough time. I think we were down 5-1 already at that point.
Yeah.
I was watching you, Darvish. No. We were 3-1 when I woke up. And, I was watching you, Darvish, closely to see how he was looking. And then they pulled him a couple innings later. Yeah. And went to the bathroom. Next thing you know, we're down 5-1.
Yeah, so it was not pretty. It was pretty rough. Another rough outing for Darvish, man. Everybody was talking about, because it was so cold at Wrigley.
Yeah,
and the wind was blowing in, that nobody was going to hit home runs. There were three home runs hit last night.
I know. And you know what was funny? I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was sitting beside Jeannie. Hayward steps up to the bat.
Yeah.
I said, come on, Hayward, hit a home run.
Yeah.
Boom, hits a home run.
Yeah.
She looks at me.
He's on fire right now.
Yeah, he is.
He's really
popped, I don't know, maybe at least three, I think, home runs out of the last three games.
Yeah, he's having some clutch hits. He's got a nice number of RBIs. He's really on fire right now, which is really, really cool. We just got to get the bullpen and the pitching going.
That's the problem. They play, is it tomorrow?
Tonight.
They get a chance to win the series, hopefully.
Well, that game might not get in because they're supposed to have a bunch of thunderstorms and stuff.
Yeah, Skilling said some of those could be strong, too. Yeah. I was watching KP last night on Twitter, and he was saying that it was just whipping around like crazy. I think Rob Martier, former WGN anchor, tweeted to KP and said, is it blowing in or out? And he said it's sort of blowing to left field, but it's really just kind of all different directions.
Yeah, they were saying on TV that it would just... It changed at the beginning of the game. It was blowing in from left field to right.
Okay.
Towards the Cubs dugout.
Yeah.
And it changed during the course of the game. It just started swirling around.
Yep.
So, you know, that's what happens at Wrigley.
Right.
So, well, we'll see. Hopefully they'll get the game in tonight and they can score some runs.
At least it'll be warmer. I think by nightfall they're saying we're going to actually get warmer by nightfall.
Yeah, so. I mean, we're supposed to like hit the 60s, and that's one of the reasons why we're going to get the storms.
Exactly.
So, anyway, yeah. All right. Well, Vic's in the newsroom. He'll be there all morning long to cover everything that's happening here live at WGN. And by the way, we're going to talk to Dan Feinberg in just a couple of minutes here, but I just wanted to mention that I was very, very, if you were a regular listener, you know that during the show yesterday morning, I was very, very excited to get home and watch Fosse Verdon, and it did not disappoint. I thought it was great. I thought it was really great, and we'll talk more about it in detail with Dan Feinberg, but I was very happy to see that they at least in the pilot, at least the first episode, they did a really, really great job with it. And I mean, you can't argue with Sam Rockwell and Michelle Williams. I mean, that's just a ridiculous cast. So I thought it was great. I watched it immediately as soon as I got home yesterday. I immediately boom got to the DVR. And watched it, and I was not disappointed.
It's remarkable how much they got Sam Rockwell to look like Bob Fosse.
Yeah,
it's a spitting image.
Yeah, he looks exactly like him, and smokes exactly like him, because it's Bob Fosse was a chain smoker, like literally would light up a new cigarette with the one that he was just finishing, and that was. And so, anyway, but the complicated relationship between these two icons and. And I happen to be a big fan of both of them, especially Bob Fosse as a choreographer, and then eventually a dancer choreographer, and then as a brilliant filmmaker. So I was very, very happy with it, and I'm looking forward to continuing to watch that series. So, all right, well, we'll talk about that more with Dan Feinberg, who's going to join us in just a couple of minutes. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. Your triple play Thursday requests, one artist, three songs. Get those in, too. 312-981-7200. And we're going to talk sibling rivalries in entertainment and only child facts and myths. All this morning on the show. But right now we're going to break. And when we come back, Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter and I are going to talk everything television related. This week on Chicago's Best, the CB team is cooking up a dinner time staple. It's Chicago's Best Chicken, Sunday night at 10 on WGN TV.
TV party tonight! We're going to have our TV party tonight! All right! We're going to have our TV party, all right!
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It is Thursday, which means Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Yesterday was Siblings Day, and we're going to talk about... sibling rivalries in music and siblings on TV, siblings in music. And since I'm an only child, we are also going to talk about being an only child So yesterday I was just like, what am I supposed to do? So 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Every couple of weeks, we talk to my next guest, Dan Feinberg. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He joins us every couple of weeks to talk all things TV, and it's always a lot of fun when we get Dan on. Let's get Dan in here. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nick.
How are you?
I'm okay. I texted my brother yesterday to acknowledge that it was National Sibling Day, and we agreed that we didn't really need to celebrate in any other way.
So you just have one brother?
I just have one younger brother who happens to live in Chicago. And yes, we exchanged a text message to basically acknowledge that apparently it was National Sibling Day and that it's not a thing we apparently celebrate.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm an only child, so I don't celebrate it either. So
I don't think anyone does. And I feel like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, like one person said, oh, look, it's National Sibling Day. And then a couple of years ago, two people did. And then suddenly this year it felt like 5 or 10 people. And it concerns me.
Well, there was a lot of stuff on my social media news feeds with people posting pictures of their siblings and things like that. So I guess it was a thing on the old social media yesterday. That's for sure.
Once we start letting social media dictate what is or isn't the thing, well, I guess that's pretty much where we are right now, isn't it?
I think you're a little too late on that one, Dan.
Yeah, we're there. We went down that spiral a while ago, I'm afraid.
All right. Well, let's get to the TV. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Let's start with Fosse Verdon. The first episode aired on Tuesday. I watched it when I got home from work yesterday morning. I loved it. Now we talked about it a little bit. Now, have you seen more than the last time we talked?
No, I've still only seen the two because I figured once I wrote my review, I didn't want to watch any more because at least not immediately before it premiered, because then I'd be like, my review was wrong, everything was off.
Right.
So I held off. Eventually, I no doubt will watch more ahead of time, but thus far, only the two this week and next week.
Okay. Well, I watched the premiere, and I really loved it. But you know, it's really funny that conversation that we had the last time you were on when you talked about it is the way I felt while I was watching it. It was like if I weren't such a big fan of both of these people, and if I wasn't familiar with their work, intimately, would I like it as much as I liked it? You know what I mean? And that was your question was like, are people who aren't really like in the know about this or who, you know, because it's pretty inside the way it's set up.
It's very inside.
Yeah, it really is. And as I was watching it, I was pleased. I mean, I thought it was great. But I just kept thinking back to what you said the last time you were on, Dan. It was like, how is somebody who's really not familiar just turning on the TV to watch, you know, an hour long drama? How are they going to feel about it?
And I think in a perfect world, anyone who enjoys it can then go and research.
Yeah.
You can always go to YouTube and you can watch the various musical numbers from Sweet Charity and from Cabaret if you happen not to know them.
So by the way, Dan, we talked about it yesterday. The NewYorkTimes.com ran a thing that they called it's on our Facebook page. Loaded on our Facebook page. It's also with the New York Times website, where they called it go down the Fosse Verdon wormhole, and it was taking highlights of their career and embedding clips right in one place. So if you want it, you could just go to the New York Times website, read about these great moments in their career, and then watch them.
Yeah, it's very easy to find those things, and it's very easy to go over the individual people at the party at Fosse's house and go, okay, I can figure out that's Patty Chayefsky,
yeah.
I can figure out that's Neil Simon, et cetera, et cetera, and sort of, you know, should I care who Neil Simon's wife is? Well, I guess probably I should because it's Aya Cash from You're the Worst, so clearly I'm supposed to care about her, et cetera, and I think people can do that. I remain curious as to the differences in response between people who love the backdrop and the people and the stuff and the people who are just tuning into it because it looked good and because they're like, ooh, I like Michelle Williams, you know, from Dawson's Creek. Probably people have moved on from just liking her from Dawson's Creek.
God, I hope so. I really hope so.
I wouldn't hope so. I think you could always hold a certain kernel of affection for Jen Lindley in your heart while also acknowledging that she's become a 4 or 5-time Oscar-nominated actress.
Yeah, no, I wasn't dismissing Dawson's Creek, but I was just. I would hope people would acknowledge what an unbelievable actress that she has become over these years. Like, just an astonishingly talented woman. So,
I think people probably know, so I'm curious what the response is. The ratings were not huge, which kind of gives me the impression both that people were able to get the feeling of whether or not they wanted to watch this based on the trailers, which emphasized what it was, but also that it could be a self-selecting audience, and that if the audience was what the audience was, A, no one needs to worry about a second season, so that's moot to begin with.
Yeah.
And B, it could just mean that the people who are the right audience for it are going to watch it, and the people who aren't either will or won't, and that's okay, and that could just mean that the people who end up watching it end up really loving it, and any of my concerns about whether it plays to people who don't know it could just be meaningless.
Because they're not watching. Exactly. How did Feud do? Because that was pretty niche, too. How did that do? Was it popular?
It did better. But the Ryan Murphy brand name really is a brand name, and I think that there probably were people out there looking at trailers for this going, they didn't mention Ryan Murphy's involvement.
Right.
It's not. Is this off-brand? Is this generic? Is this whatever? And I don't know how huge his audience is. It's not like he's the biggest populist showrunner in the world, though you'd be surprised to know how many people watch 911 each week on Fox. It's a lot. But it did slightly better. And, I think it did a better job of presenting a full sort of array of stars beyond its two leads, maybe, if that matters. And I think probably movie stars are always going to be a bigger deal than Broadway stars,
right?
At least the
right.
Nature of the art form. It was a slightly bigger audience, but not a huge audience. Definitely the two American Crime Story seasons both did bigger audiences, with OJ by far doing the larger of the audiences.
Yeah, of course. Well, but again, he's not involved at all. Ryan Murphy's not involved at all. Even though it's on FX and it feels like it's supposed to be a Ryan Murphy project, it's not at all. And I really think, you know, obviously when you have Sam Rockwell and Michelle Williams as your leads, you're going to have great acting. And that was absolutely the case of the pilot. I particularly, Sam Rockwell is fantastic, but I really particularly loved what Michelle Williams did just in the pilot alone.
And you get to see her doing some more moves in next week's episode. So, and if people need to brush up on things ahead of next week's episode, Damn Yankees is the thing you should brush up on.
Yeah, absolutely. No question about it. Yeah, I like how they're playing with, the timeline here. Because they're jumping back and forth between the timelines and things. Because the first episode was essentially about the reaction to Sweet Charity, and then like him getting the job to direct Cabaret, and that was essentially what it was, and how he needed her to come in and help him with Cabaret, and that was essentially what it covered. And of course, they started to cover his infidelity and all of that other stuff, which I know will get bigger as the show goes on. Do they continue in the same? Do they continue in the same vein in episode two?
Yes, it splits between two time periods. One, as I mentioned, the Damn Yankees one, and then another one. I don't want to spoil everything in the structure, but
right.
Yes, I already teased that next week's people's homework is Damn Yankees, so that's enough spoilers there.
Absolutely,
for that.
Absolutely. Well, I thought it was great, and again, but this is coming from a guy who worships Bob Fosse and loves Gwen Verdon. And I'm still very curious as to how they're going to handle all that jazz when we finally get to him making all that jazz. And we were talking about how deeply almost Inception like meta it's going to be the last time that you were on. So
I hope it works.
All right. I do too. Anyway, that's Fosse Verdon. I think it's great, and it's on FX on Tuesday nights, 9:00 Central. And I thought the first episode was really, really terrific. And you can read Dan's review over at the Hollywood Reporter, and you can always check it out at The Fine Print, FIEN, at both Twitter and Facebook. And we have a link on our Facebook page as well. Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure thing.
All right, great. We got more TV to talk about, lots of other stuff to talk about TV related. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks, writes for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we have a link on our Facebook page. So like us right now. Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. More with Dan Feinberg right after this on WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here. It's Thursday morning. Triple Play Thursday would get underway in a little way, in a little while. Here, get your requests in now. That would be one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. In honor of yesterday being Sibling Day, National Siblings Day, we're going to talk about sibling relationships and rivalry in music and in movies and in TV, and we're also going to talk about what it's like things that only an only child would understand, of which I am one. So that's all coming up for Talk and Text. It's 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. Like us. And right there on our Facebook page, you will see links to The Fine Print. And that's F-I-E-N, and that is Dan Feinberg, who is TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joined us every 2 weeks to talk TV, and that's where we are right now, so let's get Dan back on. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
All right, Barry has premiered since the last time we spoke, and I am loving it, and but is it wrong, because I, you know, because you've, is it wrong that I'm still laughing? Because I still think it's funny. I mean, it's clearly darker, and it's going in a direction that's even darker than how the first season ended, but it still makes me laugh. I don't know if what that says about me, Dan.
I don't want to say it's wrong. I just it's not so much the reaction that I had. I'm sure I laughed a couple times at each of the episodes that I saw. I just definitely felt like I was laughing markedly less. Mm-hmm. That would be the distinction I would make, is that I felt like the first season kind of evolved from comedy with seriously dramatic beats to kind of half and half to kind of surprisingly dark, but occasionally still very, very funny. And I felt as if the first three episodes back were dramatic with occasional wacky comedy.
Yeah.
Plus NoHo Hank, who is always just funny, but yeah, still sometimes gets a little pathos as well.
Right. Well, for people who might not know, this is season two of the show that was created by Bill Hader and Alec Berg, and Bill Hader plays a professional hitman who also wants to be an actor, and that's the sort of the combination of what's happening. And the cast is really strong, still really strong, and Henry Winkler, again, is doing fantastic work here, but you point out that he was more of a caricature in the first season, and now there's a real sense of, you want to talk about pathos, there's a real sense of sadness to his performance in the new season.
He just can't be a clown anymore, or he can't be purely a clown, because he's grieving, or thinks he's grieving, or isn't sure if he's grieving. He's for the first time actually living clearly for someone who isn't himself, and that has changed the dynamic of the character. I feel as if Sally, right? The girlfriend,
yeah.
I feel like she's gone much, much more dramatic. I feel like for the most part, across the board, with the exception of NoHo Hank, and even he is a little bit more serious this season. It's definitely felt as if the pain has risen to the surface more than laughter, which is totally what the show is going for.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's great. And I think, you know, I love that this is, you know, this is where Bill Hader is now, because he was always one of my favorite cast members on SNL, and I always thought he was just great and really funny and really talented. But I love that this is the direction that he's going in, and that he has so much creative control over this, and he's writing and he's directing, and he's given a really, really great performance. I'm just really happy for Bill Hader, being, you know, a super fan of his.
And it was renewed for a third season yesterday, so there will be more Barry still to come. And if it went from comedy to drama this season, I can't wait to see what it will become in season three. I have no answer for that.
Yeah. And this season of Veep is hilarious. And it's two. You understand it's only like seven episodes or six episodes?
Yep, it is only 7 episodes and out, so it's time to begin the process of getting emotional and saying goodbye.
Yeah, yeah. And it's such a great story on a personal level for Julia Louis-Dreyfus, you know, after the struggles that she went through and that she's back, and I've no doubt in my mind she'll get an Emmy nomination for absolutely, you know, good reason. And the show is just, it's been consistently funny ever since it started.
It has been. I feel as if there have been some changes of tone, and I've heard from some people they felt like this season was a little bit meaner. I don't know that I necessarily disagree with that. I personally feel like one of the things that's happened in the past couple seasons, perhaps since Dave Mantel took over from Armando Iannucci, is that the show has kind of lost the idea of Serena's being occasionally capable. That they've lost kind of the idea that I felt like the first couple seasons had, which were that she was, I don't know, maybe not good at her job, but the point was that being a vice president, there was no way of knowing what being good at your job was, but that she still had these moments of inspiration where you kind of saw the brilliant politician or the actually compassionate leader. And I feel like to some degree she maybe has become kind of more empty and venal in the past couple of years, perhaps as a reflection of world events, perhaps because she's changed as a character. And it doesn't necessarily bother me. It just feels like a shift that the show is taking.
Yeah. Yeah. I got you. That's legit. That's totally legit. Is it, do some people complain that like all she does is rely on Tony Hale's character?
I'm not sure I've heard that complaint. The complaint that I've heard from some people is that they feel like certain characters have become kind of unsustainably cartoonish. And I think that might be the case with Jonah. Bother me, but there's sort of it's one suspension of disbelief to believe that an aide could be this kind of horrible person and achieve a certain level of success, and then it's another to believe that he could get elected congressman in a very, very strange and quirky state, and then it's a kind of massive leap to where he currently is, and I don't think it's quote-unquote plausible. On the other hand, I'm still very much a fan of Tim Simons' performance and some of the wacky things that character does, but there's no question that character has become more cartoonish or maybe less sustainably cartoonish, whichever one you want to look at.
Right. Okay. All right. Yeah. But it's still though very, very. Are people watching it?
People are watching it to a reasonable degree. It's impossible to tell with first week numbers with HBO. People seem pleased, but HBO kind of likes to roll up all of its numbers into huge first month bundles and plus on demand bundles and whatever. So it's impossible to really get a feel for it right up until the minute that next weekend Game of Thrones premieres, and you can be sure that HBO is going to be blasting how many people watched it in the first night, because it's going to be some ungodly huge number.
Yeah. Yeah, it's everywhere. It is just so. Now, did you see the premiere, Dan?
I did. I was in New York last week for the premiere and the premiere bash, which were held at Radio City Music Hall and at the Ziegfeld Theater, respectively. HBO likes to go all out. I realized as I was in the audience at the Radio City Music Hall that I'd never actually been inside the Radio City Music Hall. For some reason,
it's a beautiful place, isn't it? Beautiful.
Oh, it's stunning. Yeah. It's fantastic, and a fantastic place to watch an episode of television blown up on the big screen.
That's pretty cool.
But yes, so I have seen the premiere. I can give very few spoilers, other than to say that I enjoyed it. I think some people hoping for an immediate rush into action from the new season are likely to be a little bit frustrated and disappointed, but that I enjoyed seeing these characters back on my TV and seeing them back together again and interacting again. And that, at least for the first episode, which is under an hour, was all I needed, really.
It's under an hour. Well, yeah. Aren't they? They don't go over, do they? Game of Thrones is usually just a solid hour, right?
This season, the episodes are going to basically get much, much longer as they go along.
Oh,
I see. The first two, I believe, are both under an hour, and then the last handful are all going to be comfortably over an hour 15 or so. There had been rumors initially that the season might be six 90-minute episodes. That turns out not to have been the case. But, yeah, the episodes are going to get a good deal meatier, and we'll see if that works. We'll see if, if that's the way the show is really designed. They've had a couple episodes that have gone long before, but it's not like, again, Ryan Murphy shows where sometimes they can go on forever, or like Sons of Anarchy in its last couple seasons where episodes went on basically endlessly from one week to the next. Basically, they didn't stop. So it's not going to be that quote-unquote bad. But yes, this episode is totally normal length and moves by very, very quickly. And yes, if your Twitter feed and Facebook feed and everything is anything like mine, it's one list of 15 best performances, 15 best episodes, 10 best action scenes, 15 people we think are going to end up on the Iron Throne at the end. It's a lot of content that people are churning on this show.
Yeah, they certainly are. They certainly are. And it's been popular from the get-go, but it has increased over the years to like a phenomenon.
It has increased wildly, and it has also consistently, during the entire run of the show, also been the most pirated show on television. So, which has always seemed like a strange thing for people to be announcing, and yet somehow it keeps getting announced every year.
Right.
But yes, it started off very popular and has become a phenomenon, and I am assuming probably by some measure this season is going to end up looking like the most watched show on television.
Yeah.
But whether it's going to be the most watched show on television in terms of live viewership, or you're going to have to go to the live plus 30 day and all that other stuff,
right?
I'm not sure, but it's going to be big.
It is, absolutely. Okay, Dan, hang on. All right.
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us from The Hollywood Reporter. We talk TV every couple of weeks, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we have a link on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Lots more TV to talk about right after this on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, which gets you requested now. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Yeah, and we are talking with Dan Feinberg. Dan is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we have a link on our Facebook page as well. And we every couple of weeks, Dan joins us to talk TV. There's always a lot to talk about. Let's get right back to it. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
So NBC's got a new comedy, and it's called Abby's. And it's got some pretty talented people in the cast, including Chicagoan and good friend Neil Flynn. So tell us about Abby's.
Yes, the premise of Abby's is that, that's a very thin premise. It's basically that a woman, a former Marine, opens a unlicensed bar in the backyard of the house that she rents. And yeah, that's the plot of the show. It's not a particularly in-depth thing. So the bar has all of the alcohol and fun that you'd want to have at a bar. It also has an elaborate seating system where you have to sit on the outskirts of the bar for a certain period of time, and then you can get to sit at a table, and then when you're really, really special, you can get to sit actually at the bar, which is where we meet Chicago's own Neil Flynn, as people would know, janitor from Scrubs and the star of The Middle for a long time. The show's primary star is Natalie Morales, who people may know from the very, very short-lived ABC Family series Middleman, but also from lots and lots and lots of guest appearances from TV shows from Parks and Recreation to the current Santa Clarita Diet on Netflix, etc. The cast includes recognizable folks like Nelson Franklin, Jessica Chaffin, and the kind of core quote-unquote gimmick of the show is that it was shot outdoors in front of a live audience in bleachers. I don't know what purpose that gimmick served, but they keep saying it as if it's a thing, and every once in a while going in and out of commercials, they'll they'll show the set with the bleachers so that you know it's a thing. But like, I could not begin to tell you if the laughter sounds different, if the intimacy feels different. Basically, though, this is another one of those NBC comedies that starts off with a likable cast, a workable premise, and unfortunately, very, very few laughs. And I like everyone involved with this. The show was created by Josh Malmuth, who works on Superstore and has worked on other good shows. I believe he worked on New Girl. It's executive produced by Mike Schur, who, of course, is Parks and Recreation and The Office and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. So he is, and The Good Place, of course.
Yeah.
So fantastically talented people. I've seen four episodes now. They sent out three not in sequence episodes to critics, and then the episode that aired last week, which was the second one, they didn't send out. So now I've seen four episodes and haven't laughed very much, but I'm going to keep watching because I like the people involved. And yeah, that's about what there is.
Yeah. I've got last week's episode on my DVR, and I've, you know, obviously set up for tonight's episode too. Yeah. And and this is another, you know, attempt for NBC to just, try and do the whole Thursday night comedy thing, that they did so well in the mid 2000s.
And it's a really good lineup. I mean, the lineup, still has Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is great and always great. It has Superstore, which I think is a wonderful little show. I continue not to think that AP Bio is very funny, but it has a lot of things in it that I also really like. Again, it has a phenomenal cast. It has a unique look and color palette that I really dig. It's got a great young cast, which I also think is impressive.
Yeah.
And again, I just wish I laughed more on a week-to-week basis, but I find it perfectly amiable and agreeable. So what you've got there is you got two great kind of cedar shows to feed into two shows that I'd like to believe could develop into something very promising. I think AP Bio is currently closer than Abby's is, but I don't know. I love Natalie Morales. I think she's great. I think Gail Flynn is always good.
Yeah.
So the pieces are there.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to watching it just to see what the deal is. And I know Neil from back in the theater days here in Chicago. I know Neil when we used to drink at a 4 o'clock bar called Ties, and he would do theater in Chicago. But every single part that he ever had, either on television or in movies, he was always a cop. He was a uniformed cop in everything that he ever did in the early part of his career. If you go back and look at what Neil Flynn did, the first few things he did, he was a cop on Seinfeld. He was a cop. You know, he did nothing for a time period. He did nothing but cops. It's good.
Well, that was a joke on Scrubs,
yep,
if memory serves.
That's exactly
that
right.
That they discovered that his cameo was it from The Fugitive. The cameo that they found.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
All right, so that's Abby's Thursday nights on NBC. You tweeted out that the TV Academy changed the rules on limited series. What's going on there?
They didn't exactly change the rules. They just made a specific ruling on three shows, and that's basically what they have to do at this point. It's the same thing with comedies and dramas. You know, if you're 30 minutes, you're automatically a comedy unless you go to the appeal board to say, but we're actually a drama. And if you're an hour, you're automatically a drama unless you go and say, but we're a comedy. And with limited series, it's been, you know, they've kind of done it on the honor system. They did it on the honor system for a while. Then they had to impose a set of rules basically because there were concerns that FX was gaming the system, was sort of throwing everything up there. And so they've made rulings on a couple shows this year, which I think fit. You know, you look at American Horror Story, it's always been in the limited series category, but this year everyone danced around making a big deal about how it was tying in two, three previous seasons and all of these former characters. Well, the thing is that the rules that the TV Academy made very clearly state that if you have recurring characters between your seasons, you're not a limited series anymore.
Right.
So guess what? They're now a drama series, at least for this season. I've heard that True Detective is planning on going to the limited category, which is a little bit odd just because the first season they made the big show of going drama because they were convinced that that they had a season that could top all of the big boys on AMC, basically the Mad Men's and the Breaking Bad's, and then it turned out that it couldn't, and it got nominated for things but didn't win. And so my understanding is this season's going to Limited. What were the other ones that I tweeted about that were
American Vandal?
Yes, American Vandal, which of course makes sense because it has the same two core characters.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
and then what was the third?
The Sinner.
Which also, the Bill Pullman character is continuity between the two seasons.
Exactly.
So, when I saw my colleague Scott Feinberg's tweet, no relation, initially panicked and thought, oh God, they're shaking up the stuff and it's going to be crazy and make no sense and whatever. And then I looked at the three things that they'd had these rulings on, and yeah, The Sinner may have had an entirely different plot between the first and second season, but the Bill Pullman character is the same character doing the same thing with memories of the things that happened in the first season. That, to me, is a drama series.
Well, over the years, Dan, as we've been talking, it's gotten kind of, it's gotten very murky, like where the Academy stands and what category fits, what show fits into what category. It's been murky, not just in the limited series categories as well, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and it's getting worse and worse, and all of these rulings, these specific rulings, they kind of make the argument, and no one thus far has suggested this, that what they really probably want to be doing is actually doing it like a best first-year show versus best continuing show. Because by the logic of American Vandal and Sinner and, to some degree, American Horror Story, which is kind of its own thing, basically claiming they were limited series in their first season and then becoming comedies and dramas, which they always were, in the same way that Big Little Lies swept the movie miniseries category, but then there's going to be a second season coming out this summer and it's going to have to go as drama, in the same way that Downton Abbey won for movie miniseries its first season and then became a drama. And what you're basically saying at that point is that any new show that comes on can be like, yeah, we're a standalone whatever, we're a movie miniseries.
Yeah.
And then it gets renewed and suddenly it becomes the thing it's going to be. Well, at that point, all you're saying is first season versus ongoing show. And I don't know that that's necessarily a ridiculous designation to make. I don't know if you need to start doing best new comedy, best new drama, best ongoing drama, best, because at that point then it becomes this huge thing, and do you start needing to make best new actress on TV? I don't know what the answer is to that, but that to me sounds like the categorization that they're doing with these.
Yeah.
And the drama comedy thing is it's just a total mess because it becomes this subjective thing, and all I can do over and over again is say, but Succession is a comedy, darn it, and everyone else will go, but no, Succession's a drama, and Succession's totally going to be a drama for any consideration.
That's,
and to me,
Succession is a comedy. It's a comedy. It's a comedy, and it's really hilarious. So I don't know. All right. Okay, Dan, hang on a second, all right?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. You can read him in The Hollywood Reporter and check him out at The Fine Print, and that's F-I-E-N, and we have a link on our Facebook page. We'll come back and we'll talk more TV right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. 312-981-7200, talk and text. And for your Triple Play Thursday requests, one artist, three songs. We'll get to those in a little bit. 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking, yesterday was National Siblings Day, so we're going to be talking about some sibling-related topics, including siblings in TV, siblings in movies, and then we'll talk about only things that only children understand, of which I am one, and I can teach you all if you're not an only child. But right now we are talking TV. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks from The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we always talk TV, and let's bring Dan back. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, so you wrote about three series finales, and I watched two of the three. I've actually never seen You're the Worst. I've never seen an episode of You're the Worst. But I did watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and of course I watched Broad City, which is one of my favorite shows. But you took on those three finales. Tell us about that piece.
I did indeed. Now, first question, going back a little bit, have you gotten around to sampling Catastrophe?
Yes, I have, and it's great.
Okay.
Yes.
So, Catastrophe was one where I told you it was a guarantee you would like it.
Mm-hmm.
That had my Dan Feinberg guarantee for Nick DiGilio.
And you've got, by the way, you've got a great track record at that.
I feel like I have, at this point, a pretty good sense of your taste. I think you would like You're the Worst. I don't think it's as good as Catastrophe, but I think it is. I think they are in many ways kind of kindred spirits in terms of tart, edgy, sardonic, sarcastic, scathing comedy. So you should check it out. I think you would like it. I'm not as 100% sure you'd love it as Catastrophe, because Catastrophe is brilliant. And really, I should have probably included the Catastrophe finale in this article as well. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that was my first recommendation for you, Nick, that you need to watch You're the Worst.
Okay.
And basically, this was me talking, sort of comparing these shows that are also coming to an end to the kind of behemoth that is coming to an end with Game of Thrones,
right,
where everyone is approaching the Game of Thrones finale, and they know the five questions that they think they need answered. And maybe everyone has a different five questions, but it's a destination-driven finale. It's a checklist finale where people have things they need, whereas Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, You're the Worst, and Broad City weren't that kind of finale. You know, I think people might have been like, ooh, who is Rebecca going to choose on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend?
Yeah.
But I don't know that people had specific plot-driven needs. They had emotional needs. And I think that all three shows had really wonderful, smart finales that correctly assessed the audience's emotional needs for those characters, and all in different ways. And I think that the Broad City finale was surprisingly beautiful.
Oh my
and emotional.
God. Oh my God. I cried. I sat on my couch and cried during the Broad City finale. I'm a massive fan of those two women, and I've loved watching them grow as the show has progressed. And the show kind of became something a little bit different than the way it started, and I love that they dove in on the other side of the camera as, you know, the seasons progressed. I love Broad City, and I love those two ladies. I was crying at the end of that show.
I thought the last season really was the one that kind of embraced the idea of the passing of time.
And
as, you know, we talked about in previous episodes, that I was just way behind on it. I fell behind. And so I basically binged almost the entire show last weekend and leading into last weekend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a great show, so I was happy to do that. But I was struck by how the final season was kind of about the characters changing and growing and moving forward in a way that the previous seasons hadn't been.
Right.
And I think it's smart to recognize that you have to do that. And I don't think it's natural for shows to keep characters in a state of arrested development permanently. I think you can do it. Like, I think that the Always Sunny guys have been rather brilliant at keeping those characters in arrested development way longer than is in any way justifiable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those characters have problems at this point with the way their lives are.
Yeah.
But I think that the creators actually understand that. And I think that's something important that you have to, you know, you look at how those characters could continue to be relatively unchanged over the years, and that speaks to a certain sickness and sadness in them that I think is essential to those characters.
You know, it's funny, Dan. When I was married, my ex-wife would come in while I was, you know, I'd be watching It's Always Sunny, and she would sit down and watch about 10 minutes, and she would just look at me and go, "How in God's name can you watch this show? These are the most despicable characters I've ever seen in my life." I said, "Yeah, and it's funny as hell." So she just couldn't watch it. She couldn't get past how despicable those characters are on Sunny.
And I think that's a fully rational approach. And I think you'll discover that You're the Worst is somewhat in that vein as
well.
Right. And that was where the show started, with the idea that these were characters who were all fairly toxic for each other, and then as the show moved along, it kind of discovered the ways in which they were also therapeutic and helpful to each other.
Yeah.
And I think that Broad City kind of started off with, okay, these are these two, you know, silly girls having fun in the city, getting high, and, you know, that's what they are. And then this season finally felt like, okay, so you had Alana wondering what her relationship was with Lincoln. You had her contemplating, you know, actually a career for the first time. You had Abby deciding, okay, I can't just be dithering around with my art. It has to be a commitment, et cetera. And so I think the show couldn't really have gone on much longer without reaching this transition point. Yeah. And I thought it made it rather beautifully. Just a great final episode. I thought that Crazy Ex-Girlfriend also made a final season where what it built to was exactly right and organic to the show. And I thought that You're the Worst did something similar. There were parts about it that bothered me because I felt like some of the choices characters made were kind of imposed by the show on the characters, which is something that annoys me, where I feel like it's a contrivance where I can feel the writers making decisions that the characters wouldn't make. But even still, that finale was wholly satisfying on an emotional level. I think there are a number of other shows that are reaching comparable ends. I think Jane the Virgin is heading towards that kind of finale where there isn't really a point that it's heading towards per se. It's not like I need answers to things. I just need the finale to kind of emotionally resonate on the way the show did. And it's such a different thing from what Game of Thrones has to do in its finale. Some people are going to care if the emotions resonate, but most people are just going to care, okay, did they stop the White Walkers? Who sat on the throne? You know, are the dragons okay?
Yeah.
And you know, I think there's more to it than that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, I would be remiss if we didn't bring up our biweekly mention of the goddess that is Pamela Adlon. My God, I love her. And this show, Better Things, is just, it's consistently just great every week. And I'm so glad that it's going to be back. You know what I mean?
It is chugging along, and it is for my money at the moment the best show on TV.
I agree with you.
There are a lot of comparably good shows at this point. I don't know there's anything I would say is better. Yeah.
Well, it's because, one of the reasons why it's the best show on TV right now is because Atlanta's not on. So that's
because Atlanta's not on, because Better Call Saul is taking the year off.
Yeah,
there are a lot of shows that have sort of taken these pauses, and they, you know, they're entitled to do it. And some of them have taken the pauses to escape from Veep and Game of Thrones and Emmy juggernauts and whatnot. But some of the best shows are not on at the moment.
I have to say, I thought the casting of Matthew Broderick on Better Things was just genius, and I thought he was great. And everything, and the kids are so good. And that goes without saying; these kids are unbelievable on the show. They're incredible, and you know, the stuff that, I mean, like the whole her mother hitting the kid with the car, and the, and how that was handled, and what came out of that, and then the punchline at the end of the episode was just hysterical. And I love that show. I love everything about it.
The show has done well with kind of big name casting this season in a way that it hasn't previously. Both Sharon Stone and Matthew Broderick, both super additions to the cast.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I love her. I love the doctor that drops the F bombs too. Who tells her to go see a psychiatrist. I thought he was great too. But it's just a great show in general. Hey, What We Do in the Shadows. I've not watched. Obviously, I haven't watched last night's episode. I will watch it in the morning when I get home. I saw a significant drop in laughs from the pilot to the second episode.
This is what I was telling you beforehand. Is that I wasn't exactly sure. I haven't watched the third episode yet either, and I think it might have been a good idea that I took time off. I don't know that the tone is exactly right for kind of a week to week or binging show. I think it may require a little kind of distance between episodes, but I'm looking forward to watching the third episode, and I haven't watched any since January. So that might be a good
move
on my part.
Sure. But yeah, I did say there was a drop off in big, cause I laughed a lot during the pilot. I mean a lot. And then I laughed here and there in the second episode, and I still like the show very much. And the werewolves are in this episode that I'm going to go home in, and then that right there makes me excited. So
again, I haven't gotten to it, so that's something to look forward to.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Dan, always a pleasure, and people can check you out at The Hollywood Reporter, follow you on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we will talk to you in a couple of weeks. Okay, Dan?
Excellent. Talk to you soon, Nick.
All right, buddy. Take care. Dan Feinberg, everybody. He's tremendous. We have him on every 2 weeks to talk TV. It's always a lot of fun to talk TV with Dan. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to jump into the world of siblings in entertainment and the world of what it's like to be an only child. Yesterday was National Siblings Day, so we'll talk about that and more. And right here on 720 WGN. In search of good news in a world filled with bad, meet a woman who's touring the country for stories of kindness. Tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
There is a young cowboy, he lives on the range. His horse and his cattle are his only companions. He works in the saddle and he sleeps in the canyons, waiting for summer, his pastures to change.
And as the moon. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6. It's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That's one artist, three songs. You want to get your requests in. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Who requested the James Taylor?
That was Paul in Maryland.
Paul in Maryland.
And the song is Sweet Baby James.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So yesterday was National Siblings Day. Were you supposed to celebrate, you know, your siblings? And we're going to get into not having siblings later on in the show. I've got some facts here that only children would understand. We'll get into that later. But right now, since it was Siblings Day, we want to talk about siblings and some entertainment. Some of the most fun sort of tempestuous sibling rivalries are in the world of music. This seems to be, the world of music is rife with sibling rivalries. And so we've got some of the... some of the biggest ones, the biggest sibling rivalries that have ended bands or, you know, suspended bands or just made it real interesting to see these bands live or to read the stories of what was happening between the siblings at the time. And if you guys want to jump in on this topic, it's we're talking about sibling rivalries in music. 312-981-7200. We're also going to get to some of the best siblings that you can see on TV and in the movies, and we're going to talk about only children a little bit later on. But so here are some of the most tempestuous sibling rivalries of all time. So this is Rolling Stone put this together. So if you guys want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. We have the Everly Brothers, Don Everly versus Phil Everly. With their intertwined country harmonies, no brothers could have sounded closer, but as their career faded in the 60s, the tension between Don and Phil Everly steadily grew. It didn't help, of course, that they got addicted to speed. The Everly Brothers finally parted ways during a 1973 show at the Knott's Berry Farm Amusement Park.
It's probably where they were getting the speed from.
I don't know why I find that so amusing. During a 1973 show at the Knott's Berry Farm Amusement Park in Buena Park, California. Phil destroyed his guitar and stormed off stage. Don told the flabbergasted crowd that the duo had broken up and finished the show by himself. In the following 10 years, the duo only spoke once, and it was at their father's funeral, and then Phil passed away in January of 2014. Wow, that's dramatic. Especially at the Knott's Berry Farm. The reason why I crack up every time I hear the Knott's Berry Farm is that there's... have I ever told you about the greatest worst movie ever made?
No.
Okay, it's a movie called Fever Pitch.
Wait, Fever...
And it's not with Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore, and it's not the British... version of the Nick Hornby novel.
So what is it?
It's a movie from 1985 with Ryan O'Neal, and it is without question the worst movie I've ever seen, and yet I've seen it 900 times. It is, without question, the greatest bad movie of all time. Ryan O'Neal plays Steve Taggart. He is a columnist, a reporter, and he goes to Vegas to do an expose on gambling, and he becomes addicted to gambling, you know, as he's writing these stories. It is so bad. The dialogue is so ridiculous. The story is so stupid. The acting is so awful. The first time I saw it with my friend Scott, and we could not stop laughing. We were laughing through the entire movie. The problem is that, you know, the really bad problem is that you can't get this movie. It's not available on DVD. It's never been released on DVD. It was released on VHS back in the day. And I think if you go on eBay, you can probably get a used VHS copy for like, you know, $10 or something. I happen to have a DVD of it. A buddy of mine duped it onto DVD from his VHS copy. So I have it and I've seen it a million times. And I can't emphasize enough just how hilariously bad this movie is. I mean, and I love hilarious bad movies, and there are a ton of them. Movies that are so, so bad that they are absolutely funny and hilarious. This, without question, tops that list. Without question, it's the funniest bad movie ever made. And in it, Ryan O'Neal is, he's been divorced, and he has he gets to take his little daughter for the weekend. And the girl who plays his daughter is really, you know, a really terrible child actor. Like, really. And it doesn't help that the dialogue that's written for the kid is just ridiculous, like the dialogue that's written for every human being on screen. And by the way, the heavy in this movie, the bad guy, is played by Chad Everett. Great character actor John Saxon is in it, plays his editor at the newspaper. And then Ryan O'Neal is just completely absurd in it. So at one point, he's very excited and his daughter is very excited because they get to see each other. They don't get to see each other very much because he's off gambling all the time. And, you know, his wife left him and all this stuff. His wife dies. I'm sorry. His wife dies. And so he can't get it. So he gets his daughter and he's going to pick up his daughter and they're going to go. The reason why I laughed is because he's going to take her to Knott's Berry Farm. So there's a moment in the movie where the little girl who is again played by a really, really terrible actress, really, really terrible young actress, is so excited that they're going to go to Knott's Berry Farm. She just starts screaming, "We're going to Knott's Berry Farm! We're going to Knott's Berry Farm!" And then they show like a quick sort of montage of, you know, him winning her a stuffed animal and them on a roller coaster. And them enjoying, you know, Knott's Berry Farm. And so whenever I hear Knott's Berry Farm, that's the first thing I think of. The very first thing I think of is Fever Pitch and that little terrible actress who played his daughter yelling, "We're going to Knott's Berry Farm! We're going to Knott's Berry Farm!" So, and I'm trying to remember if that's the amusement park that the ending of Roller Coaster takes place in too, which is another terrible movie. Have you ever seen the movie Roller Coaster?
No.
Roller Coaster was released in. Are you familiar with Sensaround?
With what?
Sensaround.
No.
All right. It was a phenomenon that happened in the 70s. The first movie to have was that was released in Sensaround was Earthquake with Charlton Heston, which was sort of one of the very first of the disaster movie craze that happened
sure.
in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Sensaround was essentially, they added a bunch of giant speakers to the back of the movie theaters, and they cranked up the sound and the bass so that it would go, brrr. You couldn't hear anything and the room would shake. So that's what Sensaround was.
Sounds like a great experience.
No, it's ridiculous. And they made a few movies in Sensaround, but then, you know, some of the stupid ideas, you know, some of the things that started happening, plaster started to fall from the ceilings of movie theaters, started to become dangerous. You know, balconies were getting, you know, weakened by it. And on top of that, this was when the multiplexes started popping up. And you, let's say you're in theater two watching a different movie, and in theater one next door is Earthquake. Suddenly the movie you're watching is in Sensoround too. So Roller Coaster was another movie that was in Sensoround. And every time you were on the roller coaster, they would crank up the brrrr, so it felt like you were on a roller coaster. And at the end, and it's a terrible movie, and at the end, George Segal is in it. And at the end of the movie, there's a big amusement park. They open a new roller coaster at an amusement park, and they have this band called Sparks play. And I can't remember whether it's... Can you look this up? Look up the plot for Roller Coaster from 1977, maybe? 76, 77? And the band Sparks is in it, which is also ridiculous. But anyway, so that's why I laugh at Knott's Berry Farm and just seeing the Everly Brothers storm off stage and bust guitars, knowing that it took place at Knott's Berry Farm. We're going to Knott's Berry Farm! I find endlessly amusing. All right, we're going to take a break and we're going to come back with some really crazy sibling rivalries. This one, these rivalries from the world of music. And we'll get back to that after the news, which is next.
Slowly passing sailing ships at Sunday afternoon. Like people on the moon, I see are things not meant to be.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 o'clock. The great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday. It means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. And that means one artist, three songs. Get them in now. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we are talking about, yesterday was Sibling, National Sibling Day. So we're talking about some sibling rivalries in the world of music. And if you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200. And we're also going to talk about siblings in TV and in movies. And then I'm an only child, so we're going to talk about some things that only children will understand. And if you want to jump in with a call or a text, it's 312-981-7200. Right now, though, we're talking about sibling rivalries in music. And 847 area code. Brings in a classic one. 847 texts in Oasis, great band. Brothers still hate each other. Yeah, they do. It's kind of hilarious actually. But it's Liam Gallagher versus Noel Gallagher. Brothers Noel and Liam Gallagher didn't just pay tribute to their favorite 60s bands by swiping their sound and melodies wholesale. They also reenacted the primal brotherly conflict of groups like the Kinks with constant insults and punch-ups. They stopped doing joint interviews because they got into fist fights in front of reporters. Call it a cover version of Sibling Rivalry. One of their in-studio arguments was even released as a single in in England entitled Wibbling Rivalry. Noel on Liam in 2000. If I wasn't related to him, I would have sacked him effing 4 years ago.
I'm still holding out for a reunion.
Well, I don't know if that's going to happen.
I wish.
There's this Liam Gallagher, this unbelievably funny story that Sacha Baron Cohen told on Conan's show. And he talks about this encounter that he had with Liam Gallagher, and it's really one of the funniest stories I've ever heard. And I can't do it justice, but it's on YouTube. You could just you can definitely check it out if you just search on YouTube. Sacha Baron Cohen, Liam Gallagher, Conan. It'll come up, and it's really unbelievably funny. But one of my favorite things about this is the Liam Gallagher and Noel is that they were scheduled to do like a show on MTV, a concert on MTV, and Liam said he didn't want to, and he canceled. So Noel did the show. It was an acoustic. It was supposed to be like an unplugged thing. So Noel did the show by himself, and about two songs in, Liam shows up drunk in the balcony right next to the stage, and then begins to heckle him for the entire show. And you can see this. This is it's unbelievably funny. But that's one of the, I mean, that's like one of the most notorious, you know, sibling rivalries of all time. You know, Oasis, Liam Gallagher and Noel Gallagher. They just did not like each other at all. And right on the back end of that is the Black Crowes with Chris Robinson and Rich Robinson. Singer Chris Robinson bought hundreds of records growing up. Guitarist Rich Robinson says he never had to because he could just steal Chris's. The Black Crowes' two brothers wrote dozens of songs together, but sometimes they had to ride in separate tour buses. We could sit in the same room, but all you'd get out of Rich would be a F-U, Chris once told Rolling Stone. Brotherly love, you know? And then he took another hit off of the bong, really. Rich's take, Chris and I have one unwritten rule. We can't hit each other in the face. So, again, that was a notorious one. But one of my favorite things is, related to Oasis, is that the Black Crowes and Oasis toured together. And it was like a summer tour. And it was they called it the Brotherly Love Tour. And so it was Oasis and Black Crowes who, you know, obviously, these are two sets of brothers who were at each other's throats constantly. So I don't know what that tour was like. You know, I had a friend who worked as a chef for a catering company that catered to live concerts. And he cooked and catered and helped cater that tour. And also the tour where the Black Crowes toured with Jimmy Page. He worked on that one too. And he said he didn't see, because I immediately asked him, I'm like, okay, you were backstage. You were cooking for these guys. Did either the Gallagher brothers or the Robinson brothers like flip chairs or bust tables over each other's heads or anything like that? He's like, no drama. I was like, really? Not that he could see, at least. So I did get like a sort of a small behind the scenes, you know, look at that. But I thought that was really funny that that's what they named the tour. It's a Brotherly Love Tour.
Maybe they canceled each other out.
Yeah, perhaps. Or maybe they just didn't want to try and one-up each other. Like the Gallagher brothers punch each other in the face. That means, well, Chris and Rich are going to have to slap each other around just to keep up. But I like both those bands, too. And it's what's really funny about both of these bands, besides the fact that they have this brother rivalry thing happening in common, but they are also bands that have been dubbed as imitations of other better bands. Both the Black Crowes and Oasis have been called that.
What I know, Oasis has been accused of ripping off the Beatles, but what about the Black Crowes?
Zeppelin. I mean, yeah.
They did play a show with Jimmy Page.
Well, no, they did a whole tour with Jimmy Page.
Super good.
Yeah. But I mean, no, there's a number of bands that the Black Crowes, like any classic rock band, like a lot of classic rock bands from the 70s, you know, sounded like that. And then not just the Beatles, but a lot of, you know, British Invasion bands sounded like Oasis.
Yeah, like the song Cigarettes and Alcohol is literally just the riff of Bang a Gong by T-Rex. So
yeah.
I think they recognize it.
Well, look, here's the thing. You know, those arguments about them being sort of imitating other bands are absolutely legitimate. But you know what? Oasis and the Black Crowes both rule. So I don't care. I don't care. I really like the Black Crowes, and I love Oasis.
I mean, Led Zeppelin didn't put on the biggest concert of all time. Nebworth, that was like, that set some records.
Yeah. Well, Zeppelin, you know, Zeppelin was the biggest. There was no between 1972 and 1980, basically. There was no bigger band in the 70s. In the decade of the 70s, there was no bigger band on the planet than Led Zeppelin in terms of record sales and tours and just popularity and insanity. The kind of unbelievable rock and roll behavior that went on. I mean, these guys set the gold standard for groupie behavior and, you know, ripping up hotel rooms and drinking and doing drugs and all that stuff. Led Zeppelin was the gold standard for that kind of activity, that kind of behavior. And then on top of that, they were the biggest band in the world. I mean, they sold out stadiums. They sold out, you know, huge concert venues. They sold tons and tons of records. They were on the radio all the time, like constantly. And they were, without question, one of the biggest bands. There was no other band bigger in the 70s than Led Zeppelin. None. So, but yeah, it was crazy to, you know, I mean, I'm a, you know, obviously I'm a big Zeppelin fan, and but the thing about Zeppelin is we were talking about the other when we were talking about people that weren't invited back to Saturday Night Live because of what they did, and the article pointed out that the replacements were never asked to come back because they were loaded when they played live on SNL. And that was the case with the Mats a lot. Like, you never knew. Like, I said this before. You never knew. If you went to go see the replacements, you never knew what you were going to get. They were either going to be completely, loaded and not be able to play, or they were going to be sober and they would be great, or they were going to be completely loaded and great. So those were your options. And that was the same thing with Zeppelin. Because I saw him in 75. I saw him in 1975 at the Chicago Stadium, and then I saw him in 1977 at the Chicago Stadium. In 1975, they were great. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen. It was unbelievable. They played for nearly 3 hours, and it was incredible. In 77, it was one of the worst shows I've ever seen. They were terrible, and that was a notoriously bad tour for them because the drugs and the alcohol intake at that point were just monstrous, you know. And I saw them in 70. I saw them in 77, and they were absolutely terrible. I've talked about this before. At one point during most of the show, Page was sitting on a folding chair because he was so loaded. The only sober person on stage was John Paul Jones, and everybody else was they were completely. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. But that's sort of like, you know, that's sort of like what happened with the replacements too. You're just like, all right, I'm going to go see the replacements, and I don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, it was on a much bigger scale with Zeppelin because Zeppelin was, you know, the biggest band in the world at that time. And the replacements were very, very popular band, but not on the level of Zeppelin.
No, they weren't the most popular band of all time.
Yeah. And, you know, they weren't, you know, like back in the day. I mean, I still have my tickets from the 1980 tour that got canceled because of Bonham's death. I still have those tickets. But, you know, back in those days, it was only, I think the first time I saw Zeppelin in 75, the ticket price was $6.50.
$6.50,
yes. And it was $8.50 in 77.
And people were probably really ticked.
$8.50 to see that. Now, when you say $8.50, that's $850 if you're going to go to a concert.
Hell, I just paid for a concert, pretty low-level local band. I paid $13.50 after fee, like $13.50 after fees. I'm like, wow, what a steal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, I'm happy to give them the money because I like the band.
Yeah.
They're good.
I don't go to a lot of concerts anymore. One, I'm an old man and I don't have the patience for it. Two, everything is a damn festival now. You can't just go see a band. You got to see 65 bands and walk around in the hot sun for 10 hours.
And I can't do that.
I can't.
I'm 25 and I can't.
Yeah, no,
that.
I can't even imagine what a nightmare that is. Like Lollapalooza is like the worst nightmare that I could possibly imagine being a part of.
It's like Castaway, but you're surrounded by drunk 15-year-olds.
Yeah, and I'm not a big summer guy. I can't stand hot weather. I hate hot weather. I hate it much more than cold weather. I hate really cold. You know, polar vortex was a nightmare, and I don't want either extreme weather. But I would take the cold over the heat.
You're going to take like a 55, 60-degree day, maybe even colder?
Well, no. I'm just saying, you know, like for me, the ideal temperature, I think with most people, would be like 70, 75 degrees.
Sure.
That would be fine. Mm-hmm. Once I hit 80, I start getting mad. Once it starts turning into 80, and then when we get these days of like, you know, heat indexes of like 100, so it's going to be 120 with the heat index. That's just ridiculous. It's ludicrous. I can't stand it.
Like
I would much rather have 70 below than 100 above. Much rather have it. Both of them suck. I'm not saying either of them are good because extreme cold also sucks, but I'll take that over the heat any day. So it just makes me nuts. I turn into one of the Gallagher brothers when it gets hot out. I become Liam. There's no,
cause, yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah. So, all right, we got to take a break here. We're talking about music and sibling rivalries within music, and there are a lot more than that. We've knocked off a couple of the classics, but we still have a few more to go here. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll jump right back into this.
When you're down and trouble and you need a helping hand and nothing, well, nothing is going right.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. And that wraps up the James Taylor Triple Play Thursday. It's Triple Play Thursday. You made Triple Play Thursday. And that's one artist, three songs. Get your choices ready. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And coming up is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right here on 720 WGN. Yesterday was Siblings Day, National Sibling Day, so we're going to talk about siblings and entertainment. Right now we're covering some of these crazy sibling rivalries in rock and in music. So we mentioned, we mentioned in passing the Kinks, but this is a big one. This is a real big one. Ray Davies and Dave Davies. The battles of Dave Davies, the Kinks' former and lead guitarist, and Ray Davies, the principal singer and songwriter, are legendary. On stage, off stage, in the studio, in the backs of cars, Ray throws curry at Dave to emphasize a point. Dave gets into a heated argument with Ray and then ends up with a black eye when he tells off the drummer for not taking his side. Nothing good ever happened without a fight of some kind, Dave said. As the years wore on, the struggles became greater, the battles more brutal, the mind games more intense, weirder, and the lows much, much lower. Whether the two can put their differences aside for a reunion tour has been the subject of dozens of news stories in over the past few years. I don't think that's going to happen.
Why even continue at that point if you're just... If everything you do is a battle and everything, I guess the artistic output was pretty good, but.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
Especially the early Kinks, but I don't know. By the time you get to Come Dancing, I don't know if the fights are really worth it.
Yeah. Well, see, but you weren't around when Come Dancing came out. That was monstrous.
Huge hit.
They sold a ton of records at that time. And then, they actually, you know, really embraced, because music was changing at that time because of MTV, and MTV changed music. And a lot of the older artists weren't embracing MTV, and the Kinks were right out there. I mean, they did really great videos. They promoted the hell out of that kind of angle. They did that kind of angle. And they embraced the new technology and the new way that music was being sold. And I don't necessarily think, I mean, it's not nearly as good as the early Kinks, but it was successful. It was big.
That's true.
Now, I wasn't even aware of this. The Bee Gees, Barry Gibb versus Robin Gibb? I wasn't even aware. I had no idea that there was any rivalry between them. The Bee Gees were one of the longest-running family bands ever, with a career that lasted from 1958 to 2003. Robin was really repetitive with me, said the band's frontman and eldest brother, Barry. In the early years of the group, the two competed for the role of lead vocalist. When Barry won that battle, Robin left the group for a solo career, but ended up releasing six solo albums before his death in 2012, but achieved his greatest success singing back up to Barry. What bonded the brothers after years of dissension was the death of Maurice Gibb, who was Robin's twin. When we lost Robin and I gravitated back towards each other a little bit. I had no idea. That wasn't a very publicized rivalry, though.
Never talked about it on their show.
No, I never. I see where you went with that. But yeah, I didn't know that. Well, this is a big one. Creedence Clearwater Revival, John Fogerty and Tom Fogerty. Tom Fogerty was the band's original lead singer. By the time it was called Creedence Clearwater Revival, his little brother John was the sole singer and songwriter. The fact that John was vastly more talented than Tom didn't stop the demotion from rankling. It's an unnatural situation having your younger brother lead the group that you're in, Tom said. In an angry letter to John, he wrote, "You have never given me or Doug or Stu credit in public." The bitterness only grew after Tom quit the band. Decades later, friends had to plead with John to visit Tom's deathbed. It was that bad.
I hear about these rivalries that are so bad that you don't talk to people, you don't talk to your brother or sister for literally decades.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I cannot foresee that. And maybe it's because I haven't had a cut that deep. And obviously these guys had fame and fortune to contend with. But I don't know. I don't know if there's really anything that my brothers or sisters could do that would completely cut me off.
Yeah. There's some history of that in my family. Obviously I'm an only child, but within my parents' families.
Super common.
I can't relate to it at all, being an only child, but that's the interesting thing. I would like to hear, and I'm interested because you have brothers and sisters, and you hear these stories about, you know, brothers punching each other. And I mean, you rough house a little bit, I would imagine, with your brothers. That happens.
We beat each other senseless.
Yeah. I mean, that happens. But to, like, do it seriously with you want to harm them in a bad way, or to make them feel terrible, or to cut them off entirely, that's got to be pretty extreme. You hear these stories with these brothers just going at it and not talking to each other for years. And in this story especially, John Fogerty wouldn't, you know, they had to be convinced to see Tom before he died.
That really gets me.
Yeah.
That's so depressing.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that's the moment when you have to turn it around and be like, oh wow, you know, let me rethink the last 20 years of my life.
Yeah.
I feel like regrets start rolling in.
Yeah.
But, I've had big arguments with my brothers. We've broken, so many things, walls, doors,
right.
Personal affects.
Yeah.
But really, at the end of the day,
brother.
Yeah, you put it to bed and you just say, yeah, we both, you know, one of us did some things that we're not super proud of, and then we try to move on. But, you know, in my family, on my dad's side, it was a little bit more common.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. And if, you know, you guys out there who have brothers and sisters and siblings, you hear these stories about these brothers doing terrible things to each other and then not talking for decades and even not even wanting to see them on their deathbed. I mean, I don't even know if that's relatable to anybody who has got siblings, but it's real for these guys. Again, it's rock and roll though, too.
That's true.
It's rock and roll. It's drugs. It's alcohol, and it's being rich. All of that adds, you know, to what happens between the brothers. Okay, we got more sibling rivalries in music, and if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Yesterday was National Sibling Day. And we're talking about that. And the news is coming up after this.
It's the third hardest thing I'll ever do. And even here, without you. And the second hardest thing I'll ever do.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. Steve Grzanich follows this show with the opening bell, and then the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday. That means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs, requests at 312-981-7200. I have no idea what that was.
I do.
Oh, give it to him. Go on, Vic.
I know one of the singers in that song, I think it's a duet, right? And I think Keith Whitley is one of them.
I don't know about that part, but I do know that was Earl Thomas Conley that was requested by Doc. The song is called Holding Her and Loving You, and he requested it because Earl Thomas Conley passed away.
Oh.
Yesterday. I believe it was yesterday. Yeah, great country singer. Very good country singer.
Okay. I was completely wrong. I thought that was Brotherly Love.
No.
Yeah, wrong. Sorry. I'll shut up now.
Oh, okay. Would have been appropriate if it was Brotherly
that's,
Love. Yeah,
that's why I thought. It sure sounded
talking,
like
that's
it.
That's what we're talking about. Vic, you get along with your siblings?
Man, I love my brother. He's probably the best friend I have in the world.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
You hear these crazy stories about these guys in the band doing terrible things to each other.
I love the one you said about the standing rule they had. I can't remember which band. We can't punch each other in the face.
Yeah, that was the Robinsons. That was the Black Crows.
That was so good.
Our rule is we just can't punch each other in the face.
That's so good.
Not in the Moneymaker.
Yeah. We're talking about that. Siblings Day was yesterday, and we are now talking about some of the crazy sibling rivalries that have been in rock and roll and in bands, and there's a lot of them. and 804 area code. By the way, if you want to join us with anything on this, it's 312-981-7200. We are going to jump into the world of being an only child, because that's the world that I know. And we've got this this great thing about facts about that only children will understand. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 804 area code texted in. The Gibb brothers were not nice to their youngest, Andy, who had a solo. Yeah, he had a solo career. He had a huge solo career. Andy Gibb was massive. Yeah. And he also died young. There's another brother Gibb that passed away young. 312 area code says, I never thought I wouldn't speak to my siblings for 2 years, but we got into an argument and they stopped talking to me. It, of course, had to do with money, and it was very silly, but they felt so strongly they decided to stop talking to me. My brother did not invite me to his wedding. Now we're close, but it has taken a while to get back to where we were. Involves money. That's always a problem.
That'll break up any relationship, yeah. Really.
It's always a problem, man. 262 area code says, hey, Nick, a lot of the rivalry between the bandmates in CCR were caused by John Fogerty taking control of the band's income, investing it, and losing a lot of it. Well, John Fogerty got screwed by the label that they were on. I think there's a story on either side of that, but I know that John Fogerty got screwed by the label and would not play any of the CCR songs for years, and he wrote them all. And so this is incredible. John Fogerty would not play any Creedence songs. So once he launched his solo career, it was all just solo stuff, no Creedence songs. He wouldn't play them. He just wouldn't play them. Because of the business and the breaking up, what happened to the band and all that stuff, he would not play them. But he was at a gathering and a celebration of a big crowd, outdoor concert that was to celebrate Vietnam veterans, was to remember the people who were lost in the Vietnam War and to celebrate the veterans of the Vietnam War. And John Fogerty wrote what is probably the angriest Vietnam protest song of all time, Infortunate Son, which is an unbelievable song. And so he hadn't played Creedence for 15 years. He hadn't played any Creedence for 15 years. He's at this benefit. He's at this concert. And I was watching it. I was watching it on TV. And he started playing Fortunate Son, and he hadn't played it in 15 years. He started playing Fortunate Son. I've never seen a crowd react the way they did. Arguably the best Vietnam protest song ever written. Certainly one of the most powerful.
It's been in, like, what?
It's in every Vietnam. Any movie that takes place, it's in, Forrest Gump during the Vietnam scene. They play Fortunate Son is a song that shows up in all of them.
Yeah.
And all of the movies that deal with, in some form or another, with the Vietnam War and the political, the political climate around the Vietnam War, the reaction to it and everything. But I'm telling you, the response that this audience had to it was unbelievably powerful. And their interviews with him afterwards, it wasn't on the set list. He had not played it in 15 years, but he was like, we got to play Fortunate Son.
He knew.
And he played Fortunate Son, and everybody in the crowd went nuts. It was really what an incredibly powerful thing to see. All right, how about this? The Allman Brothers Band, Dwayne Allman versus Greg Allman. For decades, Greg Allman played in the Allman Brothers Band as the singular Allman Brother. His other sibling, Dwayne, died in a motorcycle accident in 1971, but when they were both still alive, Dwayne never let his little brother forget who was boss. As kids with a lemonade stand, he made Greg do all the work. When Greg was about to get drafted, Dwayne convinced him to take a bullet in his foot instead. And when Greg was reluctant to join the band with him, Dwayne knew how to push his buttons. If you can snivel on out of here, you can snivel on out of here, Dwayne told him. If you don't try, then don't call yourself my brother.
Where do you get that kind of attitude?
I don't know.
Was it Dwayne or Greg that was in Derek and the Dominoes?
Dwayne.
Oh, man.
Yeah. How about this one, Jackson 5, Jermaine Jackson versus Michael Jackson? Jermaine Jackson always felt like the superstardom achieved by his little brother Michael could and should have been his. The culmination of that resentment, Jermaine's 1991 single Word to the Bad, with two D's, Word to the Bad, where he attacked Michael for his extensive plastic surgery. Michael and I have never feuded, Jermaine claimed. The only reason I wrote this song, and it came part of from the bottom of my heart, was to help my little brother get a grip on reality. For his part, Michael apparently sabotaged Jermaine's solo career, according to record executive Clive Davis, when Michael found out that Kenneth Babyface Edmonds was going to produce a Jermaine album. Michael deliberately kept Babyface too busy to do it. Oh, man. Now, see, that's another one I didn't know about. That's definitely another one I didn't know about. I never knew that there was a feud between Jermaine Jackson and Michael Jackson. Yeah. No clue on that one. The Jesus and Mary Chain, William Reed and Jim Reed. The noise pop Scottish band, longtime cult favorites, were fueled by alcohol and conflict. We do fight and there's no getting around it, Jim Reed said. On their 1998 U.S. tour, a Los Angeles gig that lasted 15 minutes featured Jim knocking over microphone stands and the brothers arguing with each other. Play anything but that, Jim said, and ended with William quitting the tour. Reportedly, the band's tour manager considered calling the Reed's mother back in the United Kingdom to see if she could get them to settle down. Now, you know it's bad if you're a rock star and the manager is going to call your mom to settle you down. I remember I saw the Jesus and Mary Chain after Psycho Candy came out, and they were very... an unpredictable band. Some would consider pretentious. I saw them at the Metro when Psycho Candy came out back in the 80s, and they played the entire show with their backs to the audience. I don't know. I thought it was amusing, and I paid for tickets. So,
it's like a very, I know it sounds weird, but that's like a very Scottish thing to do.
Yeah.
It's to just be so angry, so upset that you're just going to, I'm just going to play with my back to the audience.
Well, it wasn't like the audience did anything to them. No. They just came out and they played the whole show with their backs to the audience. They didn't even, it wasn't like the audience did something and they got angry and decided, well, here's a lesson for you. They came out and with their backs to the audience.
Totally unrelated to the show. I guarantee they were just so, they were miffed about something.
Yeah, they probably were.
They decided
were.
To just take it out on
they
everyone
probably
else.
Were. I don't know. How about this? The National, Matt Berninger. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Berninger. And Tom Berninger. It might be inevitable for a band with two pairs of brothers in it, Scott and Brian Devendorf, and identical twins Aaron and Bryce Dessner, to be a hotbed of sibling rivalry. In 2013 documentary, Mistaken for Strangers, however, was a portrait of a different axis of fraternal tension. The National's lead singer, Matt, invited his brother Tom to come on tour with them and work as a roadie and to make a movie. Tom proved hapless as a roadie and got kicked off the tour after he forgot to get on the bus. But as a filmmaker, he got great footage of his brother. Like the time a frustrated Matt asked him, do you have any kind of organization or plan for this film?
If you can find it's a really good movie.
I've not seen it. I know the band, but I'm not, I'm an old man, man. I don't know.
Even with zero familiarity, it's a really interesting one.
Okay. Kings of Leon, Caleb Followill and Nathan and Jared versus Nathan and Jared Followill. So this is a trio of siblings. The three Followill brothers in Kings of Leon, Nathan, Caleb and Jared, spent their childhood on the road. Dad was a Pentecostal preacher. The Followill role models were apparently Cain and Abel. After singer Caleb left the stage halfway through a Kings of Leon concert in July of 2011, bassist Jared said fans should hate Caleb, not us. Nathan, the band's drummer, and Caleb then got into a fight over a game of pool or shuffleboard. One drunken night in 2007 climaxed with Nathan dislocating Caleb's shoulder and breaking a $7,000 mirror. My God, what kind of mirror costs $7,000? The only kind of mirror that costs $7,000 is if you break it because there's cocaine on it. That's the only $7,000 mirror that I would know of. And stabbing Caleb's bed with a kitchen knife. Brotherly love is captured in the documentary Telehina Sky. You get drunk and you talk crap, Nathan screamed at Caleb. Your band cannot stand you. So they just keep making documentaries about brothers who hate each other in bands?
I mean, it makes for good for good A-roll, you know?
The Ramones, Joey Ramone versus Johnny Ramone. Sure, they were they weren't biologically related. Joey was born Jeffrey Hyman and Johnny was born John Cummings. But they took on the same last name in the mid-70s, and they had a legendary feud over a woman, of course. Linda, who dated Joey and ultimately married Johnny, that was so bitter it basically proved that they were really brothers. In most families, would have meant loud arguments over Thanksgiving, but for the Ramones, it meant decades of high-octane gigs where the band's two main members weren't speaking to each other. All right. So there you go. Some classic rivalries. Sibling rivalries in bands. We're going to talk about TV siblings after we break here. 312-981-7200. Who are your favorite TV siblings? 312-981-7200. Now, make your Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It is a Thursday morning. That means Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. That means get your requests in. It's one artist, three songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's also the number to call for talk or text. And we're talking about yesterday was National Sibling Day. And so now we're going to talk about the best TV siblings of all time. What would be your choices? Who are your favorite TV siblings of all time? 312-981-7200. Huffington Post put together an article talking about some of their favorite TV siblings. And that's what we're talking about here in honor of Sibling Day, which was yesterday. And then also National Sibling Day was yesterday. I didn't celebrate it because I'm an only child. So we're going to dive into the world of facts that only an only child would understand. And all the only children out there, we hope that you can participate and listen in or text us. But right now we're talking about best TV siblings of all time. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Okay, how about Dean and Sam Winchester from Supernatural? Supernatural is a show that's been on for, I think it's now in its 57th season, if I'm not mistaken.
Coming to an end.
Yeah, 15 years it's been on. I think I know it's his final season, but I think it's been on for 15 years.
Minimum, yeah.
Yeah. They say here, the family that battles demons together stays together. Honestly, the bonds of brotherhood don't get much stronger than our sexy supernatural duo. They've dealt with psychotic killers, grim reapers. They've gone to hell and back literally for each other, and they look damn good doing it. So I interviewed Curtis Armstrong. Curtis Armstrong from Better Off Dead. He's Miles in Risky Business. He's Booger in Revenge of the Nerds. He was a semi-regular on Supernatural. And he came to our Flashback Weekend horror convention a couple of years ago, and he was delightful. And Risky Business is my second favorite movie of all time and was a very, 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 very... seminal movie in my life. I was 18 when that movie came out. I had just graduated high school and I was going into college. And that movie touched on a ton of stuff that I was going through at the time. And it was dark. And I personally think that Risky Business ends on a tragic note with the complete corruption of an innocent kid who makes it to Princeton because he's a pimp. But anyway, Curtis Armstrong is great in that movie, and he's got the famous, every once in a while, you got to say what the blank line. So anyway, it was really a delight to interview him, and I did his Q&A at the convention, and then he stuck around an extra couple of days and appeared at my film club screening of Revenge of the Nerds. So it was really cool to have him there and answer questions from the audience after the movie, and he wrote a book, and he did a book signing at my film club screening. And it was great. And he told me that he's gone to a lot of conventions over the years. He's been to a bunch of conventions, signed a lot of autographs, you know, signed a lot of pictures, and you know, did the whole convention circuit for many years. But he said there's nothing that even remotely compares to the intensity of a Supernatural convention. He said the fans of Supernatural love the show, are very intensely loyal, and deeply, deeply are connected to the show. He said he's never seen anything like it. And he's been to a ton of conventions. And I, you know, I've been to a few conventions, and I'm a host at Flashback Weekend now since 2002. And, you know, horror fans are very, very, very loyal, and they're, you know, and they're intense, and they're also awesome. So I've seen the kind of people that will go to these conventions and are fans of the genre and really, really are connected, you know, to that genre and to the people that make those movies and star in those movies. I've seen it firsthand, and I'm actually one of those people. I'm a huge fan, you know, of the genre and of so many of the people that have passed through the doors over at our Flashback convention. And I acknowledge that. But Curtis Armstrong said that the Supernatural conventions are on a whole different level. So are you a fan of the show, Tom?
I would catch reruns on like TNT every once in a while. I never really got into it. I thought it was a cool concept, but I remember when I was in high school, that was the number one way to talk to like the choir girls or the theater girls was to mention Supernatural.
Oh.
And that was, I was way too geeky to talk to anyone popular. So I was a theater and choir kid, and they loved it. You just had to mention, you know, one episode. They'd go off on it for about 2 hours.
Yeah.
And that's your date.
And everybody says that about this particular show. I mean, it's a show that I've seen, you know, a few times, and I thought it was fine. You know, and I thought that the two leads were pretty great. Even Dean from Gilmore Girls. You know, I didn't get into it as deeply as everybody else, but Curtis Armstrong's not the only person that I've talked to who has mentioned just how hardcore the fans of Supernatural are. I mean, you know, I don't think the ratings for Supernatural are necessarily through the roof. I'll have to ask Feinberg the next time we have him on in a couple of weeks. Just out of curiosity, does Supernatural have, you know, ratings to justify the fact that it's been on for over 15 seasons? And I really don't think that the ratings are massive or through the roof, but I think that the fan base is so passionate that I think that they had a lot to do with why the show's been on as long as it's been on.
Yeah, it's the consistency of that fan base, you know.
Yeah.
Not through the roof, but enough.
Yeah, and enough people to watch it to, you know, tell the CW, hey, you're not canceling Supernatural. We will not allow you to cancel Supernatural. So, anyway. All right, so that's the first one of TV siblings that we're talking about, Sam and Dean Winchester from Supernatural. What about you guys think? Who are your favorite TV siblings of all time? 312-981-7200. All right, we'll take a break. The news is coming up right after this. Is going to call your mom to settle you down. I remember I saw the Jesus and Mary Chain after Psycho Candy came out, and they were an unpredictable band. Some would consider pretentious. I saw them at the Metro when Psycho Candy came out back in the 80s, and they played the entire show with their backs to the audience. I don't know. I thought it was amusing, and I paid for tickets. So,
it's like a very. I know it sounds weird, but that's like a very Scottish thing to do.
Yeah,
it's to just be so angry, so upset that you're just gonna. I'm just gonna play with my back to the audience.
Well, it wasn't like the audience did anything to them.
No.
They just came out, and they played the whole show with their backs to the audience. They didn't even, you know, it wasn't like the audience did something and they got angry and decided, well, here's a lesson for you. They came out and with their backs to the audience.
Totally unrelated to the show. I guarantee they were just they were miffed about something.
Yeah, they probably were.
They decided to just take it out on
everyone
else.
They probably were. I don't know. How about this? The National, Matt Berninger. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Berninger, and Tom Berninger. It might be inevitable for a band with two pairs of brothers in it, Scott and Brian Devendorf, and identical twins Aaron and Bryce Dessner, to be a hotbed of sibling rivalry. In 2013 documentary, Mistaken for Strangers, however, was a portrait of a different axis of fraternal tension. The National's lead singer, Matt, invited his brother Tom to come on tour with them and work as a roadie and to make a movie. Tom proved hapless as a roadie and got kicked off the tour after he forgot to get on the bus. But as a filmmaker, he got great footage of his brother, like the time a frustrated Matt asked him, "Do you have any kind of organization or plan for this film?"
If you can find, it's a really good movie.
I'm not seeing it. Really, I don't. Good. I'm not familiar. I'm not. I mean, I know the band, but I'm not. You know, I'm an old man, man. I don't know.
Even with zero familiarity, it's a really interesting one.
Okay. Kings of Leon, Caleb Followill and Nathan and Jared versus Nathan and Jared Followill. So this is a trio of siblings. The three Followill brothers in Kings of Leon, Nathan, Caleb and Jared, spent their childhood on the road. Dad was a Pentecostal preacher. The Followill role models were apparently Cain and Abel. Cain and Abel. After singer Caleb left the stage halfway through a Kings of Leon concert in July of 2011, bassist Jared said fans should hate Caleb, not us. Nathan, the band's drummer, and Caleb then got into a fight over a game of pool or shuffleboard. One drunken night in 2007 climaxed with Nathan dislocating Caleb's shoulder and breaking a $7,000 mirror. My God, what kind of mirror costs $7,000? The only kind of mirror that costs $7,000 is if you break it because there's cocaine on it. That's the only $7,000 mirror that I would know of. And stabbing Caleb's bed with a kitchen knife. Brotherly love is captured in the documentary Telehina Sky. "You get drunk and you talk crap," Nathan screamed at Caleb. "Your band cannot stand you." So they just keep making documentaries about brothers who hate each other in bands?
I mean, it makes for good for good A-roll, you know?
The Ramones, Joey Ramone versus Johnny Ramone. Sure, they weren't biologically related. Joey was born Jeffrey Hyman and Johnny was born John Cummings. But they took on the same last name in the mid-70s, and they had a legendary feud over a woman, of course. Linda, who dated Joey and ultimately married Johnny, that was so bitter it basically proved that they were really brothers. In most families, would have meant loud arguments over Thanksgiving, but for the Ramones, it meant decades of high-octane gigs where the band's two main members weren't speaking to each other. All right. So there you go. Some classic rivalries, sibling rivalries in bands. We're going to talk about TV siblings after we break here. 312-981-7200. Who are your favorite TV siblings? 312-981-7200. Now, make your Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. And at Triple Play Thursday. You mean Triple Play Thursday? That's one artist, three songs. Get them in at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Okay. Yesterday was National Sibling Day. I didn't celebrate it because I'm an only child. And a little bit later on, we're going to dive into some facts that only children will understand. And I also found a big list of celebrity-only children. So in case you didn't know, some pretty big names are only children. And we'll get into that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Huffington Post put together a list of their favorite TV siblings of all time. And next on their list is Ross and Monica Geller from Friends. From incredible dance routines to sharing their first kiss together, Monica and Ross set the bar for the awesome brother-sister relationships on TV. He was the dorky, a lovable paleontologist, and she was the obsessive clean freak, mother hen of the group. At times, their relationship was weird. Monica's unhealthy interest in Ross's love life and their complete lack of boundaries made for some weird, funny moments, but the Gellers were always there for each other. Yeah, I don't. I can't contribute to that because I've. It's on right now. I'm looking at it right now. It's on Channel 9 right now. I've seen only one full episode of Friends ever in my life, and it was because I was stuck on the tarmac at LaGuardia. We couldn't get to the gate, so they popped in a videotape of Friends.
Mm.
That's the only full episode of Friends I've ever watched.
Yeah.
I've ever watched.
I really don't understand the appeal, especially of Ross. I like David Schwimmer. I think he's a pretty good actor, but yeah. His character is super annoying,
yeah.
Unlikable, constantly neurotic, and not in a way that's any way endearing.
The only time I've ever seen any, you know, besides that one episode, the full episode of Friends that I saw that when I was stuck on the plane, was when Friends was on before Seinfeld. There was a period of time when TBS would show Friends before Seinfeld, and I would put it on with maybe 10 minutes left, just waiting for Seinfeld. And so I would see 5-10 minutes here at the end of episodes, and I'd be like, I don't know. I'm a really big fan of Lisa Kudrow's. I really love Lisa Kudrow. I think she's great. I think she's funny, and everybody thinks I'm crazy. You know, like all my guy friends think I'm crazy, but I think she's the hottest of the girls on Friends. I just think she's, you know, and everybody's like, oh, what are you crazy? Jennifer Aniston's on the show. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I'll take Lisa Kudrow. But I think she's really funny, and I love Romy and Michelle. I love that movie. I think her and Mira Sorvino are unbelievably funny in that movie. And and then I've liked her in everything that she's done outside of Friends. The comeback was really cool. She was. I think she's great. But yeah, and I'm watching it right now. I'm looking at it right now. I don't even know what's happening. Ross has a bag of groceries. And he doesn't seem happy. That's the only thing that I can figure out. He never seemed happy, though. All right. We're talking about TV siblings. Keith in Kansas says, call me corny, but I always liked Michael J. Fox, Justine Bateman, and Tina Yothers from Family Ties. A lot of people liked that show. That show was on forever. That was the biggest thing in the 80s. 540 area code says, favorite TV show siblings would be Rick and David Nelson. Yeah. Yep. 708 area code. Bart and Lisa Simpson are a sibling. Hey, man, don't leave Maggie out. Don't leave Maggie out of the equation, or as Homer calls her, other daughter. So let's see. Here is Tony on WGN. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Nick. How you doing today?
All right.
Good. Hey, I was talking to your phone guy, and I mentioned I gave them the original name, so... The Moses and the Samuel and the Jerome Horowitz brothers.
Yeah, that would be the Three Stooges.
Absolutely. And, you know, if there were any siblings that ever worked together in such violent ways, you know, obviously I'm dating myself a little bit, but, you know, my mother used to, you know, we used to poke each other's eyes out and things like that, me and my brothers, but, you know, just a fascinating group I don't know. Did you like them? I mean, was that funny for you?
Are you kidding me, Tony? I'm a man. Of course I like the Three Stooges. What are you,
well, okay,
are you
well,
crazy?
There are a lot of people that thought they were too violent.
No. They were brilliant. And I'm in the minority. I think Shemp's the best Stooge. I'll take Shemp over Curly any day.
Well, when Shemp had a stroke, and you can tell it towards the end of it, because I'm actually a connoisseur of the Stooges.
Well, when Curly had his stroke.
Yeah, Curly had a stroke. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
When Curly had a stroke, and you can see that he was slowing down, he didn't know he had a stroke, then they brought Samuel in, they brought Champ in, and it's okay, fine, you got to do. They made Curly cut his hair. He had a beautiful head of hair.
Yeah.
And you know, it's fascinating. I've read the books, some books by Mo Howard, and I love the one when he was on one of the late night shows, and they had a big pie fight, and that was all wonderful. I mean, they worked together well, and all those episodes, and they went on and on and on, and you know, God bless them for being the comedic. And Friends, I believe you. I that's the most stupid show I've ever seen in my life. Oh. I wouldn't watch it.
Okay, all right, Tony. Thanks a lot.
Phone guy,
man. That's your new job. Your phone guy. Hey, I was just talking to your phone guy.
That's all right. That's all right. It's part of what I do.
You've been my phone guy for over 2 weeks now.
I know. Answering phones, dialing phones.
Fixing phones. 804 area code says, Wally and Beaver Cleaver, and the actors continued to be friends. 816 area code says, for a wholesome Big Brother Little Sis relationship, it's hard to beat Joni and Richie Cunningham. Now, here's the interesting thing about Happy Days. I don't know if you know this or not, Tom. In the first season of Happy Days, there was an older brother. There was an older brother.
Okay.
Older than Richie. So there were three kids on Happy Days. And he just disappeared with no explanation. I can't remember the character's name, but there was an older brother than Richie on Happy Days in the first season, and he just, without explanation, they got rid of him.
Joined the military.
So.
Went to Korea.
There's like no, I don't think they ever supplied a reason why suddenly the older brother disappeared from Happy Days.
Mm-hmm.
So. 815 area code says, Becky and Darlene from Roseanne, two awesome TV sisters, very realistic portrayals, especially in the teen years. That's another one where another actor came in and played the role. Sarah Chalk came in and played, I don't know which one, Darlene, I think. Mark the Breadman says, my favorite TV siblings are Peter and Nathan Petrelli from Heroes. It's an interesting choice.
Well, that first season's real good.
I love the first season of Heroes.
It's great. That's primo mid-2000s television.
Yeah, no, I thought it was great.
It
kind of fell apart after that. Okay, how about Michael Scofield and Lincoln Burrows from Prison Break? That was a really stupid show, but I watched it because my friend was on it.
You had a buddy on Prison Break?
Oh, yeah, Mike View. I've talked to you about him before. He was in Dark Knight.
Yes, sir.
He's the guy on the stand in the Dark Knight.
Uh-huh.
He was in Public Enemies. He's the guy who screwed up the prison break in Public Enemies and gets kicked out of the car by Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
And he was a regular on Mob Doctor. And he had an arc on Prison Break. And, but they killed his character off. He was very upset because it was like, I clearly am not going to be able to be on this show anymore.
Do you think he was going to go the distance with it? Maybe
he kept getting scripts, you know, but I'll tell you what, the for me, you know, he was telling me about, because he and I were really big time drinking buddies. We used to hang out together all the time and drink. And so, you know, when he booked Prison Break, we were all very happy for him, you know, because at that time, you know, it was before he got Public Enemies, and it was right around, I think it was before he got The Dark Knight. It was right around the mid-2000s when he got it, and I'm pretty sure it was before he got The Dark Knight. And so we were talking about what it was like to work on Prison Break, and the highlight for me was that he got to work with Robin Tunney. That was
that's super cool.
That's the highlight right there. Robin Tunney bummed a cigarette off of him one time. He was taking a break near his trailer, and she was walking by and saw that he was smoking, and she's like, hey, can I bum a smoke from you? And he had a cigarette with he didn't have any scenes with her because he was in prison. He played one of the prisoners.
Yeah.
So he didn't have any scenes with her, so he did get to talk to her a few times, and he shared a cigarette with her. So I was like, well, that's it. You're not going to get better than that.
No. That's peak.
I mean, it's Robin Tunney, for God's sake.
We do have an update on the missing brother from Happy Days. A few people texted and called in. Chuck.
Chuck was his name, right.
Yeah, and apparently they did explain it. He went to college on like a basketball scholarship.
All right, I knew because in all the pictures, in all the publicity pictures from the first season of Happy Days, he's always got a basketball in his hand. He's wearing like a he's wearing like a 50s style button-down sweater, and he's a tall redhead. I think he's a reasonably recognizable character actor, if I'm not mistaken. And his name is Chuck. That's right. I totally forgot about that. But in every publicity photo, like, hey, here are the Cunninghams. They're on the new ABC sitcom Happy Days. He's always got a basketball in his hand.
Yep. Oh, man. Played by Gavin O'Herlihy.
Oh.
And then by Randolph Roberts.
Okay. Well, there you go. So Chuck, he went on a basketball. So apparently that scholarship lasted. He must have got picked up by the pros, because he never returned. And that show was on for like 12 years.
Had a beautiful career in the NBA.
Just never went back to the Cunningham house again. So how about Prue, Piper, and Phoebe from Charmed. Speaking of Robin Tunney from the movie that inspired Charmed, which would be The Craft.
Rock and Roll.
Which is a phenomenal movie that I don't want rebooted.
I'll hold my breath. It's Zoe Lister-Jones who's doing the reboot, and she seems like she'd do at least something fresh.
Yeah, but I adore that movie. I think The Craft is a great movie, and I think all four of the ladies are fantastic in it. Rachel True, by the way, who is an incredibly cool chick. I'm all about The Craft. I love that. All right, let's break here for the weather, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap up the TV sibling rivalry, or TV best TV siblings, and then we're going to jump into the world of The Only Child, where we're going to talk about famous only children and about facts and things that only an only child would understand. And if you're an only child, we would love you to participate by text or calling at 312-981-7200. All right, here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, wind advisory for winds gusting to 45 miles per hour and lakeshore flooding possible along the Illinois-Lake Michigan shoreline due to building waves. Much of the day today, cloudy with scattered showers and temperatures in the 40s. And then later in the day and into the evening, the temperatures will rise into the 60s with an increased risk of strong to severe storms. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy, strong southwest winds gusting over 40 miles per hour, high in the mid-50s. Cooler in the afternoon. For Saturday, mostly sunny with seasonable highs in the mid to upper 50s. Sunday, occasional rain, possibly mixed with wet snow. High temperatures between the upper 30s and lower 40s. And then for Monday, plenty of sunshine, scattered clouds and warmer. Highs around 50 to 55 for Monday. Current temperatures 37 degrees at O'Hare. It's 39 at the Midway and 39 at the lakefront. All right, quick break here on 720 WGN. Then we're going to wrap up the TV sibling talk right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 o'clock, Triple Play Thursday. You may be Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Can I guess who requested that?
Yeah, go for it, man.
Ike.
Yeah, 100%. King of the 80s.
Yep. Robert Palmer, everybody. All right. Steve Grzanich coming up at 5 with the opening bell. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we're talking about TV siblings. Which ones are your favorites? All right. I never watched The O.C. Seth Cohen and Ryan Atwood were brothers. Oh, they weren't. So it says here, so they weren't actually brothers, but if we're going to do a list of best TV sibs of all time, there's no way we're not including the street kid from Chino and his lovable geek of a sidekick. Well, that's stretching the rules a little bit here.
Hmm.
If they're not brothers.
Isn't here, Huffington Post.
Hmm. Oh, I like this one. Dan and Jenny Humphrey. Gossip Girl. Love that show. Lonely boy Dan and sweet sister Jenny were always the outsiders at their fancy Upper East Side private school, and Gossip Girl, having no money and living in Brooklyn, put a damper in their social life. But that didn't stop them from trying to fit in. They dealt with Queen Bee's hookups, breakups, and scandalous upper crust society for 6 seasons, and they did it all together. Well, you know, little Jay was not on the show for a couple of seasons. She left the show. And she was in a band. I can't remember the name of the band that she was in. But she was like she was AWOL for a while. I mean, they did give an explanation for why Jenny was gone, but I guess there were some sort of in real life there were conflicts between the actress and the producers and stuff, and she was concentrating a lot on her band, and she was like putting out really risque material or something that wouldn't really kind of fit in with the character that she was. And then, of course, Dan Humphrey ended up being Gossip Girl. Yeah. All right. We got some texts here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 262 area code says, don't forget Bud and Kelly Bundy. Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Bud and Kelly Bundy, that's a good one. Also on King of Queens, Carrie had a sister, but they eliminated her halfway through the first season. Is Carrie Leah Remini?
I think so, yeah.
Because I don't watch King of Queens. There's another show I don't watch. It's King of Queens.
My dad watched it a lot, but it was for Jerry Stiller.
Yeah, well, I could understand
too
that.
Funny on that show.
Yeah, I could understand that because Jerry Stiller was so brilliant on Seinfeld too.
Yeah,
He was
there because he loves Seinfeld and he saw that Jerry Stiller was in a new sitcom, yeah. So he's gonna watch.
That would have been the only thing that brought me into that show would have been Jerry Stiller, but I just couldn't do it.
Some of those bits that he did were hilarious.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. I mean, Jerry Stiller is hysterical, and I love him on Seinfeld. Why would she just take my TV guide?
Don't forget the wine tote.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the wine tote. 815 area code says, Adam's Family, Morticia and Ophelia. By the way, the new animated Adam's Family movie looks pretty good.
Yeah.
It looks pretty good.
I'm glad it's coming back.
Yeah. Well, I love the Adam's Family.
It's so much fun.
Yeah. It was funny because Carolyn Jones, who played Morticia on the TV show Adam's Family, is in The Man Who Knew Too Much, and she's got like a red wig on. She's got color in her skin. She's not pale and like Morticia, but everybody recognized her in the theater the other night. Jay says, "Hey Nick, I had a crush on the Cartwright sisters, Angela and Veronica, during my teen years. I can understand that." 630 area code says the two Beaver brothers in Angry Beavers.
That was such my show as a kid. I couldn't believe it. That was what my mom called me and my middle brother was, the Angry Beaver.
Oh, is that right? All right. How about this? Damon and Stefan Salvatore from The Vampire Diaries, another show I don't watch. Our second supernatural pair on the list, the Salvatore brothers, have what you might call a strained relationship. A centuries-old love triangle caused a rift in even the strongest of brotherhoods. Thanks to their immortality, they both had the ability to hold a serious grudge, but when they're not romantic rivals, they actually have pretty badass bromance going on. Tia and Tamara Mowry from Sister Sister are on here. We don't really explain why Tia and Tamara are on this list. We've covered how amazing they are before, but we will, just in case anyone has any doubts. Separated and adopted at birth and then reunited years later, these twins suffered through annoying neighbors like Roger and crazy parental figures, and returned to TV for a reality series years later. Did you ever watch Sister Sister?
Yeah, big fan.
Oh, yeah?
Big fan of Sister Sister. Because that was on, that was on Disney.
Was it? I thought it was like a WB. I think it's a WB show.
Yeah.
I think it was a WB show.
But I do remember watching it a lot, and it was one of those shows that the parents were like, yeah, we can all sit down and watch Sister Sister together.
Oh, okay.
It was a lot of fun.
All right. Finn Hudson and Kurt Hummel from Glee. We love Glee, the singing, the dancing, the melodramatic monologues, the satirical humor, and most importantly, the way it can take terrible high school experiences, put them into a musical number, and have any issue resolved by the end of the episode. Finn and Kurt moved in completely different circles at the beginning of the show. Finn, a high school jock. Kurt, a flamboyantly gay choir boy. But Glee Club changed all that when they finally became true brothers. Their parents married in season two. It proved what we knew all along, music can bring everyone together. See, that's a show. Glee is a show. Glee is a show that I stayed with long after everybody jumped off the bandwagon. I was still, people would be like, why are you still watching Glee? And I'm like, because I still like it. The Starks from Game of Thrones. The most honest and loyal house in the Seven Kingdoms, the Stark kids share a pretty tight bond with each other between losing their dad to that jerk Joffrey, leading rebellions in Westeros, is that right?
Westeros.
Westeros, I don't know. I gave up on that show halfway through the first season. I was like, I don't know what the hell is going on right now. No idea what's happening. And venturing beyond the wall, they've been separate for most of the show, but that doesn't mean we aren't rooting for a reunion for this season. Of course, with most of them now dead, it could be a small affair. Doesn't everybody die on that show all the time?
Not everybody.
Didn't some dude hold a door and die? Wasn't he holding some door and he died?
Oh, yeah, Hodor.
Wasn't he literally holding a door?
Well, yeah, there's this whole thing where it's like, back in time, he was saying, hold the door, or someone was saying, hold the door to him, and it caused him to have like a brain aneurysm as a kid, so that the only thing he could say was Hodor.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
for all you fans out there.
I know a lot of people get their heads cut off. A lot of people have sex with their sisters, and some dude held a door. That's all I know. That's all I know about that show. They're dragons.
I mean, those are the three main things you should probably know. Yeah. I think you're ready for the
premiere. I
won't
be lost again. Yeah. Carlton, Hillary, and Ashley Banks from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Carlton was a bit naive, Hillary was just plain stupid, and Ashley was a brat, but together the Banks siblings balanced each other out, and honestly, we thought Carlton's iconic dance just had to show up on any list. That's another show that I did not watch.
You didn't watch The Fresh Prince?
No.
I loved it.
That was a show. That show was popular in the late 80s, right?
Early 90s?
Early 90s. Okay. I'd say early 90s. I was not watching a lot of TV at that time.
Oh, you missed out.
Dawn and Buffy Summers from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. All right. So there you go. There's a list of the best TV siblings of all time. You want to wrap it up with some texts? 312-981-7200. After the news, we're going to jump into the world of the only child. We'll talk about famous only children and then things that only children will understand. And 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We'll be back with the news after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday continues.
Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday.
That's Robert Palmer. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. It is Thursday morning, and here till 5, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We've been talking about National Sibling Day, which was yesterday, and we were talking about sibling rivalries in rock and roll bands, which is a very, very common occurrence, as we've discovered this morning, and then some of your favorite TV siblings. Let's wrap that up here. We got some texts for people. 773 area code says Bobby and J.R. Ewing. Ah, yes. 815 area code says the Baroni brothers from Everybody Loves Raymond. And 815 area code says Brett and Bart Maverick. And 219, Mark from Hobart says, my favorite siblings' sisters are Kristen, Mandy, and Eve from Last Man Standing. Another show I've never seen one episode of is Last Man Standing. So, all right. But now we're getting into the world of only child here. We're going to be talking about some famous only children and all that cool stuff. I happen to be an only child. So during National Sibling Day yesterday, I didn't do anything. Just kind of sat around and went, yeah, all right, good for you. And then we're going to talk about the experience of being an only child and talk about some famous only children. And here's Chris on WGN. Hey, Chris.
Hey, thanks for keeping me up past 5 a.m.
go ahead, Chris. Hello? Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, I just want to tell you I'm an only child myself.
Okay.
And I know some only children from TV. You know Punky Brewster, she's an only child, but she was adopted.
Right. Right.
And you got, what else? Webster, he's an only child, too.
I guess all the only children on TV were adopted. That seems to be the message here.
Uh-huh, but I know Gary Coleman ain't one.
Right. Okay. All right, Chris. Thanks for the call, man.
Yeah, one more thing.
Yeah?
I love the old WGN back in the day because they used to show Night Court, Cheers, Charles in Charge, and that game show, Fortune Hunt. You remember that game show?
Yes, I do.
They need to reboot the Fortune Hunt. Tell Linda Colmeyer to come back on TV.
Yeah. All right. I'll get on that, Chris. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
All right, take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And if you're an only child, we would love to hear from you, text or talk or whatever it is. We've got some things that only an only child would understand. And And the person who wrote this piece says, due to the largely rising costs of raising children, single-child families are on the rise in America and other developed nations, with some 18% of families in the U.S. having only one child, a figure which has doubled in the last 30 years. That means that more children in this generation will experience the joys and challenges of being raised in what comedian John Hodgman affectionately calls, quote, the super smart, ultra-shy narcissist club. The author says, as an only child, here are 30 things that I know to be true about growing up solo. And we're going to get into that. And I want to hear about anybody's experience about being an only child. 312-981-7200. Now, here are some famous only children. You ready for this? Al Pacino is an only child. Alan Greenspan is an only child. Alicia Keys is an only child. Ansel Adams. Anthony Hopkins is an only child. Betty White is an only child. Brooke Shields. Burt Bacharach. Wow, this is amazing. Candace Bergen. Carol Burnett. Cary Grant. Catherine Hicks, star of Fever Pitch with Ryan O'Neal.
My God.
That came back.
Just when you thought it wouldn't.
It would not. Charlize Theron is an only child.
Well, when you have a kid and it's Charlize Theron, why?
Yeah.
Why even bother with more?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when you give birth to Furiosa, you should just quit right there.
Like what, top 10 most beautiful people on the planet?
Yeah, she's beautiful. I mean, I personally think she's at her hottest in Fury Road.
Oh, well, yeah. She's commanding the entire screen by herself.
Ridiculous. Chelsea Clinton is an only child. We all knew that. Chyna Kantner. Christina Applegate. Cole Porter was an only child. Daniel Radcliffe. Good old Harry Potter. He's an only child.
There's not like a little, you know, a little Radcliffe running around or a younger Radcliffe jealous of his older brother.
Yeah. And being forced to live under the stairs. David Copperfield, the famous magician.
Who was played by Daniel Radcliffe in a movie. Or maybe not him, but Daniel Radcliffe was in a David Copperfield movie, which is how he got discovered.
Well, wait a minute. You're saying David Copperfield as in Dickens?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm talking about David Copperfield, the magician. He was an only child.
Wait, there's an actual person?
You don't know who David Copperfield is?
No. I thought he was like Dickens.
Wait. You seriously don't know who the magician David Copperfield is?
No. I thought there was just David Copperfield.
Well,
that's the book.
Yeah, David Copperfield literature, and that's you know Dickens.
Yeah,
there is a wildly worldwide popular magician named David Copperfield.
You got to be kidding me!
I'm not kidding.
Hold on.
How have you avoided David Copperfield? I know you're young. You're only 25, but David Copperfield. He's a worldwide famous magician. Who's been playing Vegas now for like 30 years.
He made
the Statue of Liberty disappear. He had TV specials. This is a real dude. I'm not making this up, Tom.
Well, I see him now, and he does not look like he's from late 1800s England.
No, because he's David Copperfield the magician.
From New Jersey.
I can't believe you don't know who David Copperfield is.
I'm sorry.
Wow.
I just thought that there was David Copperfield.
Wow.
Dickensian
dude. No, there's this. David Copperfield is a magician who's been around, seriously been around, like doing magic for like 40 years.
Well, now I know what I'm going to do for the rest of the day. I'm going to catch up on David Copperfield.
I mean, I'm not kidding. He made the, on a TV special, he made the Statue of Liberty disappear.
How do you even do that?
I don't know. He's a magician. He's a magician.
Oh, jeez. Did you just hear a window shatter somewhere? the illusion is over.
Yeah. Wow, man. Elvis Presley, famous only child. Frank Sinatra was an only child. I didn't know Frank Sinatra was an only child. Wow. Franklin Roosevelt. Gerald Ford, another president. Gregory Peck was an only child. Isaac Newton. Jim Lovell, the astronaut.
Mm.
James Dean was an only child. Jeff Bagwell.
Who's Jeff Bagwell?
Baseball player.
Oh, okay.
Used to be with the Astros. That's when they had the Killer Bees lineup.
Mm. Okay, yeah.
Joe Montana, football player.
Mm-hmm.
Only child. John Lennon was an only child.
Yep.
Joy Behar.
Probably talked her way into preventing another Behar.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, only child. Lauren Bacall. Laura Bush, only child. Leanne Rimes. Lenny Kravitz. Leonardo da Vinci. I'm in pretty good company here. Lisa Marie Presley. The Mahatma Gandhi. These are all pretty impressive. These are pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Mark Burnett, the king of the reality show.
Creator of Survivor.
That's right. Matthew Perry, speaking of Friends, only child. Nancy Reagan. Natalie Portman is an only child. Phil Lynott from Tin Lizzy, only child. Or Phil Lynott. I've heard both pronunciations.
I've always said Lynott.
Phil Lynott. Yeah, I've said it. Yeah. I don't know. I've heard Lynott. I've heard Lynott. Whatever it is, he was unbelievable.
Only child. It seems like all these people have benefited from not having siblings.
That's probably true. Probably true. And by the way, the first thing I did when I got to Dublin was I went to his statue.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I did. We checked into the hotel and we went, and I told my wife, we said, we got to go see the Phil Lynott statue now. And then I got my picture taken with it like 9 times.
Two big thumbs up.
Big, like, that's it. That's it. There's so many amazing things to see in Ireland, but the first thing I wanted to see was
Phil Lynott. Hey, man, the boys are back in town.
That's right, man. So, we went to a bar in Cork that, because Lynott's from Dublin, and Thin Lizzy formed in Dublin, but for some reason there's a bar in Cork that's all, it's Thin Lizzy floor, ceiling, walls, everything. And the bathroom was on the second floor, and the walls on the stairway up, all Thin Lizzy, and then there's one room in the back dedicated to Rory Gallagher. So you got the entire bar, and this is Cork, not Dublin. The entire bar is all Thin Lizzy, and then in the back there's a small room dedicated to Rory Gallagher. All right, we're talking about being an only child, famous only children. We got more of those coming up, and then things that are true about growing up as an only child. 312-981-7200. All right, let's break for some weather. Today there's a wind advisory for winds gusting to 45 miles per hour and the lakeshore flooding possible along the Illinois lakeshore, the Lake Michigan shoreline due to building waves. Much of the day, cloudy with scattered showers and the temps will be in the 40s. Then later in the day and into the evening, temperatures will rise to the 60s with an increase in a risk of strong to severe storms. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy, strong southwest winds gusting over 40 miles per hour, highs in the low to mid 50s, turning cooler in the afternoon. Saturday, mostly sunny, seasonable highs, mid to upper 50s. Sunday, occasional rain, possibly mixed with wet snow. The high temperatures only in the upper 30s or lower 40s. And then for Monday, plenty of sunshine, scattered clouds. It'll be warmer, afternoon highs between 50 and 55. Currently 37 degrees at O'Hare, 39 at Midway, 39 at the lakefront. All right, we will take a quick break here. When we come back, more facts about only children. And if you're an only child, text or call us. Let us know what your experience was like. More famous only children as well, all coming up right here. We're celebrating National Sibling Day, but this time we're celebrating it by not having any siblings. Okay. Get Real in the Morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, and Paul Conrad and the entire WGN-TV Morning News team. That's weekdays 4 to 10. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man! At 312-981-7200. We are talking about famous only children and then some things that only children would understand. 434 says, corrections, Elvis was actually a surviving twin. That's true. Charlie McCarthy always claimed to be Candace Bergen's brother. Oh, all right. If you want to believe a wooden dummy, then okay. 815 area code says, my husband's an only child, great confidence and skills, never had to go through sibling rivalry, but a loneliness and longing for sibling he never had. I've never once longed for a sibling I never had. Never once. It was never a thing.
Never
thought about it.
Not a brother.
No.
Rick DiGilio.
Never thought about it. 301 area code says, what about Isaac Newton's brother, Fig? All right, here we go. There it is.
All right.
Somebody drank their Henny Youngman juice this morning. All right, other famous only children. Richie Sambora from Bon Jovi.
Who?
You don't know who? Wait a minute. You don't know Richie Sambora? Do you know the band Bon Jovi?
Well, yeah, I know. Is he the guitarist?
Yeah, he's the guitarist.
Well, yeah, we're talking about a band that's named after one guy.
Yeah.
I just didn't know.
Yeah, Richie Sambora.
So he had the talk box with the... Ooh, whoa, whoa,
yeah,
ooh,
yeah.
Ooh. All right, yeah.
That's Richie Sambora.
Good for him.
Yeah. Robert De Niro, only child. Robin Williams was an only child. Rudy Giuliani. Sammy Davis Jr., only child. Samuel L. Jackson. Oh, my God, Saoirse Ronan.
Well, when you birth perfection.
Oh, my God, Saoirse Ronan. Sarah Michelle Gellar, Selena Gomez, Shirley Jones, Steve Allen, Ted Koppel, Teller of Penn and Teller, Terry Hatcher, Tiger Woods, Tommy Lee Jones, all these people, only children. Walter Cronkite and William Randolph Hearst. So that's not bad company to be a part of here as an only child. And I'm also a weirdo because I'm a left-handed only child. So that's two strange things.
If only you were colorblind.
Yeah. So here are some things that we all know to be true about growing up as an only child. And if you want to jump in with your thoughts, it's 312-981-7200. We don't all match the stereotype. We've heard it all before. Only children are spoiled, rotten little brats. Well, guess what? So are the lot of you normal people. You don't hear us complaining about that all the time. Not all of us are completely self-obsessed. That is correct. We prefer to avoid conflict. We didn't grow up with a sibling to torment or be tormented by, and therefore we're naturally adverse to peer conflict. That's absolutely true.
You don't feel the need?
No way. I can't stand conflict.
But you like debate.
Yeah, but
just
I mean,
as much
like
as the next guy though.
Sure, but I mean, if there's any possible way that I can avoid any kind of conflict or uncomfortableness, I will.
Mm-hmm. When you do get into conflict, do you feel uncomfortable in it, or you just?
It depends. I mean, on the conflict. If it's a conflict where in fact I know that I'm right, then I, you know, it's not as bad. But I just don't like to, you know. It's not, you know, I'm not one of the, I'm not a guy who, you know, even to the level, I'm not a guy who likes to return food in a restaurant. I'll just be like, oh, whatever, I'll eat it. We are often voracious readers. That's true. Without the existence of a built-in familial playmate, we find other ways to occupy our time. Add some people, albeit imaginary, into a cast of characters in our lives. Yeah, I mean, I read like a maniac when I was a kid. I still read a lot, but not nearly as much as I did when I was a kid. And I think that it's interesting that that's one of the reasons is I didn't have a sibling or anything. You know? It was just my folks and me. And I read a lot. And I started reading at a pretty young age. And when I was a kid, my friend Dan and I, Dan Long, not the Dan Long that works here, but the Dan Long I grew up with, we would go to the Hild Library in Lincoln Square. We would walk up to the Hild Library every Saturday and get books, and then we would go see whatever movies were playing at the Davis, whatever they were. It was usually a double feature, and we would go, and that was our Saturday.
Was Dan Long an only child?
No. No. Came from an Irish Catholic family. So
well, there you go. Hey.
Not an only child. So, yeah. Yeah, two. He had two brothers and a sister.
That's a good yeah. Amount.
They all had biblical names, of course.
Daniel. Yeah.
There was Daniel. There was Patrick. There was Edward and Mary.
Very nice.
Those were the long siblings. So, we love to hang out with big families. In much the same way that a visit to the country is as an exciting and novel adventure for a city dweller, observing the dynamics and inner workings of a large family is enjoyable for only children. That's true. Because you don't experience that. It's true. So, okay, let's take a quick break. And if you're an only child and you want to get your 2 cents in here, you know, listen. Yesterday, everybody who has brothers and sisters got to celebrate and be happy. Can we look up and find out when Only Child Day is? There's got to be.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a National Siblings Day, then to be fair, there should be a National Only Child Day. So, all right.
Spoken like a true only child.
It's literally tomorrow.
What?
It's tomorrow.
The 12th?
Yeah. It's literally tomorrow, April 12th, 2019.
Oh, wow. Why didn't they make it today? I mean, if you know what I mean, why not do it one day after after National Sibling?
I'm your phone. I'll get them on the phone.
Get them on the phone. Make that change, will you? All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more Only Child talk. Tomorrow is Only Child Day. All right. Had no idea. Okay. All right. Let's get to the news after this. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Triple Play Thursday. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to hear 3 songs by Ozzy. We're only going to be able to hear 2 because we only have 1 more break for a bump here. But that's Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Who requested the Ozzy?
That was Glenn in Evanston.
Glenn in Evanston. Good choice, my friend. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're here till 5 a.m. Tomorrow is Friday, so all the regular Friday features will be here. Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, that's when you listen to this radio station 24/7 whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds kind of dirty and it makes you giggle. You jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And also, Nick D Show Spies, that's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, we want to know about it. You become a spy. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And we got You Big Dummy coming up. That's when we read actual news stories about dumb people doing really dumb stuff, and then we vote on who is the biggest dummy and the dummy of the week. So all that stuff coming up, regular features for tomorrow. All right, we're back here, and yesterday was National Sibling Day, and we just found out that tomorrow is actually National Only Child Day, and I happen to be an only child, and we just rattled off a huge list of celebrities and well-known people who are also only children. And this article was written here, and it's about things that we know to be true about growing up as only children. One of the other ones is that we tend to be closer to our friends. We treat our friends like the brothers and sisters that we never had. We're not satisfied with casual acquaintances. We want to talk for hours on the phone. We want the talk for hours on the phone every day type of buddy. That's pretty true. We don't mind being alone. This is absolutely true in my case. Absolutely true. We don't mind being alone. Have you ever seen someone eating at a restaurant or going to a movie by themselves? Guess what? They're probably having a great time ordering or watching whatever they want. Only children are completely comfortable being alone. I always find it weird that that people think it's weird to go to a movie by yourself.
It was the only way I got to see the movies I wanted to see.
If people are like, what, you went to the movies by yourself? Yeah. I like going to the movies by myself. I like going to the movies by myself. I always find that weird. And I know that a lot of people that, you know, think it's weird to go out to dinner by yourself. I don't think that's weird either. I'm hungry. I'm going to go out to eat. I don't necessarily have to go with someone. I don't know. Only I don't think oldie children ever even think about honestly, I don't even think we even... It never even occurs to me that it's weird to go someplace by myself. Never occurs to me. Here's Greg on WGN. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Nick. How are you this morning?
All right.
Yeah, my mother was born in 1914. Her father was... He ran a logging company down on the Mississippi River, and she was an only child. My father was born in 1925. His mother gave him up for... put him in an orphanage during the Great Depression because she couldn't afford to take care of him. And he was an only child. And I am the product of both of them, and I am an only child.
Wow.
So I have no brothers, cousins, sisters, uncles, aunts, nieces, nephews.
Wow.
There is nobody out there. I am me.
Yeah, that's it. Wow, that's interesting. That's interesting, coming from the history of only... But that really makes you... So you did you... What would happen at, like, Thanksgiving and stuff? Would it just be the three of you?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it is. That's the way it is in my, because my parents are not, don't, you know, we're not really close with the outlying families. So we're, it's just, you know, whenever there are holidays, it's just the three of us. And I don't mind that at all. I really don't.
No, when I was a kid, I never even thought about it. I mean, you know, other people were going out to, you know, visit their families, but as a child, it never even occurred to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't mind being alone. And you were talking about all the people that are famous only children.
Yeah, yeah.
I think when you're an only child, it causes you to be more creative and to, I don't know, I think it helps you develop better because you don't rely on anybody else.
Yeah, no, I think there's merit to that. I really do. And I can personally attest to that, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have no regrets, and I don't envy people with siblings because I was happy.
Yeah. All right. You very know. Cool. All right, Greg, thanks for sharing your story. I appreciate it.
All right. Enjoy our day tomorrow.
Okay. Okay. Hey, all right, Greg, take care. All right. Listen, we got to break into the newsroom here. Vic's got something going. What's going on, Vic?
Hey, Nick, thanks. We're hearing from ABC News that WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange has been arrested. He's, of course, been kind of holed up in the Ecuador embassy in London for 7 years, I believe. But hearing from ABC News, they're being told by British police that, again, he has been removed from the Ecuadorian embassy and is in custody. We'll try to have more by the top of the hour.
Okay. All right. Appreciate that. Vic Vaughn in the news, keeping on top of things as we always do here at WGN. Always keeping on top of the news and the latest. You'll get updates when we get them. All right, we're back here. Liz sent a text in. It says, Dear Nick, yes, the same feelings about conflict grounded me for a lifetime people pleaser. My life, my career, always wished for a sibling, but not always easy knowing what I want since I am so tuned into the needs of others. Thanks. I love your show. Thanks for the insight on other singletons. Is that what we are? Are we singletons?
That's a good name. Mayor of Singleton.
Thank you very much, Andy. Let's see. We are old souls. We are old souls. As the majority of our interactions outside of school are with adults, we tend to be a little more mature than our peers. Well, I don't know about that. In my case, we tend to be a little bit more mature than our peers, and as such, we act older than our age. Okay, that's the first one on this list that I'm like, I don't know about that. Because I'm a moron and I act like a moron. So, we know exactly why we are only children. Every only child eventually gets the talk where our parents explain to us why they didn't provide us with a sibling. In my case, I was late in life and I was an accidental birth. The whole conversation feels like an apology and it's awkward. That's not me talking. That's the author talking. That's not me. We had imaginary friends. In fact, our imaginary friends had imaginary friends. We crafted elaborate narrative exchanges with these figments of our overactive imaginations. We had a great time doing it. I don't necessarily think I had imaginary friends. I did act out stuff as different characters when I was a kid, but I didn't have like an imaginary friend that I would talk to, but I would act out different things by myself.
Well, I think I was the same in that respect, even though I had siblings.
Yeah.
I don't know, because there were times when I just wanted to be alone so bad.
Yeah.
You had, I had that luxury taken away from me because I always had someone nipping at my heels wanting to play. And, you know, most of the time I wanted to, but
yeah,
if I wanted alone time.
This one's very true. We are less prone to PDA. Absolutely true in my case.
Not a handholder?
Oh, no. We didn't grow up being constantly touched, and as such, we tend to be a little more reserved with our public displays of affection. I'm not a real touchy-feely guy in any kind of manner. So I agree with that one 100%. We are less likely to want kids of our own. Well, sir, I'm certainly living proof of that. We are a little sensitive. Yeah, that's true. We didn't grow up being ribbed and constantly picked on by siblings. We never built up the emotional calluses needed to live in such a cruel world, so we're often a little sensitive. Yeah, I agree with that. We are not likely to throw a punch, but we often wonder what it would be like to get into a real fist fight. I've been in two fist fights in my life in 53 years, over 53 years. And they were both when I was, one was when I was a kid, and one was in my 20s, where one of my friends we were leaving a bar, bumped into somebody, and one of my friends got punched by another guy, and I tried to break up the melee, and this guy punched me, so I punched him back. That was the only other time. You know what's really funny about like, you know, like when you get into like maybe if someone in real life gets into a fight, they last like 12 seconds. You know what I mean? And they're awkward. You know, I love watching movies where people get into like a fight. Oh yeah, let's get into a fight. And the fight's like 5 minutes long and they beat the crap out of each other and they throw perfect punches, you know? That's not the way it is in real life. If somebody gets into a fight, it's people fall over, they don't connect. You know, there's like, it's just, and it's usually literally this fight that I'm talking about, the cops, a paddy wagon. We were on Halstead. For some reason, we were going to one of those terrible bars. I can't remember the name of the bar, but it was a terrible, I have no idea why we were going. And they charged a cover. They wanted us to pay a cover. And we're like, I said, I'm not paying a cover to get into this place. And it was like a pickup joint. It was one of those kind of like a club. The Beaumont. That's what it was called. It was called the Beaumont.
Still there?
I have no idea. That area is not that area. When I was still a drinking man, that was not an area. I went to dive bars when I was a drinking man. I hung out at bars, neighborhood bars. They're not necessarily dive bars. Because now the people that know, the people who may be listening to me who know what bars I used to hang out are like, hey, that's not a dive bar. But I just like neighborhood bars that don't, not clubs, not pickup joints, not in a hip area. I don't like that stuff. But I don't know why we were all, somebody was like, hey, let's go to the Beaumont. I think one guy just broke up with his girlfriend or something and was like, let's go to the Beaumont because, you know, you could pick up chicks at the Beaumont. And I refused to pay. They were charging a cover and I'm like, I'm not paying money to go into that place. And as we were walking away, someone got shoved. The fight broke out. Literally 30 seconds come by, paddy wagon. People are getting pulled into the paddy wagon. We didn't get pulled into the paddy wagon. It was the people who started the fight did. But they literally lasted 30 seconds. It's not tough. Or cool, you know. Fights are stupid. First of all, fights are stupid. If you're over 12 and you get into like a fist fight, it's something wrong with you. It's like Albert Brooks. Albert Brooks gets in Lost in America, which is one of the greatest movies ever made, one of the funniest American comedies of all time. He gets punched in the nose by a guy who. Julie Haggerty, they get into a fight. Julie Haggerty hitchhikes and she gets into the car with Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds, the guy, Donald Gibb. And so he drives to a diner where he followed the car that picked her up. They get in and he starts to talk. And Donald Gibb's like, let's go outside. Come on right now. Let's go outside, buddy. And pops him in the face. He punches him in the face and he gets a bloody nose. And so Julie Haggerty and him, they get away. They get back in the Winnebago and they're driving. And he goes, and he's got his head tilted back and a tissue up his nose, you know, to stop the bleeding. I can't believe this. I got punched in the nose. I got a nosebleed. Nosebleeds are for 12-year-olds. They're not adults. Don't get nosebleeds because he got punched in the nose. So, all right, we got a break. More facts about being an only child. If you want to jump in, Talk or text. It's 312-981-7200. Here's your weather forecast. A wind advisory for winds gusting up to 45 miles per hour and a lakeshore flooding is possible along the Illinois Lake Michigan shore due to building waves. Much of the day, it's going to be cloudy, scattered showers, temperatures in the 40s later in the day and into the evening. The temperatures will rise into the 60s with an increased risk of strong or severe storms. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy, strong southwest winds gusting up to 40 miles per hour, highs in the low 50s. On Saturday, mostly sunny, seasonable highs in the mid to upper 50s. For Sunday, occasional rain mixed with the wet snow. Highest temperatures in the upper 30s to the lower 40s. And then on Monday, plenty of sunshine, scattered clouds, and warmer. Afternoon highs between 50 and 55. It's currently 37 degrees at O'Hare, 39 at Midway, 39 at the lakefront. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the show and wrap up the whole only child talk, too, right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5. In just a few minutes, Steve Grzanich will host the opening bell. That's coming up, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So we've been talking about siblings in TV, siblings in music, because yesterday was National Sibling Day, and then we just discovered that tomorrow is actually National Only Child Day. I'm an only child. We've been talking about famous only children and some of the characteristics that actually are pretty common in only children. And we got some texts coming in. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. 815 area code says, my daughter is an only child, hates it to this day. She has two children because she didn't want an only child to, quote unquote, suffer. Wow.
That's intense.
It is. I don't feel that way. I feel the absolute opposite of it. I mean... 773 area code says, I was one of five, but as my sisters have passed, I feel alone and love going out alone. My brothers live on the other side of the country, and I only see them once in a blue moon. Susan says, I love only children. I married one and only went out with them. They get things done in their own way. That's right. We get things done in our own way. I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean. but yeah, we do. We get things done in our own way, one way or another. All right, here are some of the other facts here. People automatically think that we are weird. Telling people that you are an only child is like saying that you were raised in a cult. You get a range of looks in response that spanned the gap from mildly surprised to outright disgusted. Yeah, I don't think I've ever gotten outright disgusted when I tell somebody I'm an only child. I do get like, "Oh, really?"
Is it really that uncommon?
No, I don't think so, but I think people, you know, just go, "Oh, okay." I don't think it's that uncommon. It's like I think you know, people who do have brothers and sisters immediately can't imagine what it would be like not to have a brother or a sister. And I think that that's their initial sort of emotional reaction to it. It's like when you go, I'm an only child, and they're like, what? Because they spent their entire life with siblings.
I had siblings added to my life. Like, obviously I had my two younger brothers, but then when I was like 7 years old, oh, by the way, you have two half-sisters. They live on the other side of this ocean, and they love you very much.
Yeah. We're not great at sharing. Our things are our things, and our food is our food. We didn't grow up having to share, and therefore we're not very good at it. Yeah. We are drawn to other only children. Three of my closest friends are also only children, the author writes. It's a little like a private club. It does feel like we're in a club. You know? And that's why I mentioned the fact that I'm left-handed. That's definitely a club. That's definitely a club. Maybe probably even more so than being an only child, because the left-handed thing is a, you know, I'm sort of obnoxious about my pride of being left-handed, because the world is made for right-handed people. There are so many things I had to learn to do with my right hand, like cutting, you know, scissors. to go and get a specific, you know, left-handed scissors.
I'm sure sitting at a desk, because a lot of desks are right. I mean,
the desks are made for right-handed people.
And
school desks are made for right-handed people.
That's part of only 10% of the population is being left-handed.
Yeah.
So that's really special. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, it was weird too, because when I was a little kid, I've told this story on the air. I don't think you've heard it before. I was asked to go up. I went to a Chicago public school. This would be in like 1971. I was like six or something like that. And I was asked to go up to the chalkboard and write out some letters or to write something. And I went up there and I put the chalk in my left hand and I started to write, and the teacher slapped my hand and said, no, that's wrong, and put it in my right hand. And I tried to write in my right hand and it wasn't comfortable at all. So I put it back in my left hand and I started writing again. She slapped my hand again and said, no, that's wrong. Now I, you know, to be fair, this was 1971 and this woman was probably in her 70s. Okay, she was an older teacher at that time. So this was a woman who was born in the 19th century and had probably these old school sort of beliefs. And, I mean, there are myths and theories that, you know, left-handed people are evil, that they're connected to the devil. These are all these, like, old wives' tales. And back in the day, people would be forced to learn how to write with their right hand or do things with their right hand, to the point where some parents or some people would actually tie the left hand behind the person's back, so that they would have to do things with the right hand. It was so bad at this school, though, that my mom had to come to the school and have a meeting with the principal and the teacher and say, hey, listen, my son is left-handed. Stop slapping my son's hand and telling him that he can't write with his left hand. He's left-handed. And then that doesn't happen, you know, I've told this story on the air before, and other left-handed people have called in with similar stories, people around my age. I'm sure it doesn't happen now, and it hasn't happened for many, many, many years. But it did really happen. Like, there was like, you cannot write with your left hand. So
that's just wild.
It's crazy, yeah. But it's true. And I, you know, let's see. How about this? According to this article, only children are a little obsessive. Without the distractions that siblings provide, we get deep into our hobbies and deep into everything else too, which is one of the reasons why my mind won't shut off. I get obsessive about stuff, and that's one of the reasons why it takes me at least 90 minutes to fall asleep. At least. I'm not one of these people who can hit the pillow and be out like a light. It takes me at least 90 minutes every single time I go to bed to try and sleep. We talk to ourselves. That's true. I talk to myself. We love attention. I guess that's true. I mean, I did theater for many years, and I have a radio show, so I guess that's true. And then we're not very competitive. That's also very true. And we saved our parents a lot of money. Children are extremely expensive. In fact, it's been estimated that the total cost of raising a child often exceeds $250,000 by the time they reach 18. There you go. We save our parents money. what's on the show tomorrow, Tom?
We're welcoming Mr. John Laurie from Laurie's Planet of Sound over in Lincoln Square to talk a little bit about Record Store Day and his awesome store.
On Saturday. So we'll talk about that. Okay. We'll break here for the news coming up after this. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will be back tomorrow, Friday morning, all the regular Friday features, and I'll talk about Record Store Day as well.